Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by Shudder. You've heard us talk about this premium streaming video service quite a bit, so if you don't have it, what the hell are you waiting for? It's $4.99 a month or $49.99 for the year. It's easy to navigate and curated by a pretty stellar team. This is the place you turn to for a wide range of horror flicks like Silver Bullet, Dust Devil, and City of the Living Dead, or thrillers like the newly added Double Lover, which I'm long overdue to see, Cold Hell, and Misery. You Might Be the Killer, Amsterdam's Silent Night, Deadly Night, and Maniac have recently joined their library, which grows from month to month. Seriously, don't be left alone in the dark on this one. To try Shudder for free for 30 days, go to shudder.com/podcast and use the promo code WAVES.
Tonight's show is also brought to you by Fright Rags. Fright Rags is the number one source for horror t-shirts, with specially curated collections created by renowned horror artists. They offer the best art and the best quality anywhere. Recently released, celebrate the holidays in horror style with the Krampus-themed holiday decorations, along with reprinted shirts and socks, and brand new beanies to keep you toasty warm. And brand new this week, new collections for Silent Night, Deadly Night and Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, featuring all new designs and reprints of classic shirts. Save an extra 10% with the coupon code SHOCK10. 10% off through December 31st with the coupon code SHOCK10. Only at www.fright-rags.com.
Okay, welcome to episode 126 of Shockwaves. I'm going to host Rob G. Whole team is here. Very special end of the year episodes.
Two-parter. As long as we have enough to say.
I think we will.
Elric Kane, I have a feeling you have plenty to say.
I'm a quiet guy.
All right.
Reserved. Oh, dear Lord.
Ryan Turek.
Hello.
A man of few but important words. I don't know.
Sure. A man of belly with full, lots of cookies.
Yeah, cookies.
Belly full of cookies.
He's in the Christmas spirit because our last host, Rebecca McHenry, hi. She had gifts waiting for her in front of her. She's like, I don't understand. What's this for? And Ryan looked like a heartbroken 10-year-old. He's like, Becca, it's Christmas. and so Ryan brought his Christmas game.
Becca
brought the cookies and the Chex Mix.
I rarely walk into rooms and have presents waiting for me. So it was really nice.
Yes.
So.
Me and Elric just looked at each other like, you should have
late.
We're like, we're planning. We're planning stuff for you guys. We just haven't gotten to it yet.
Becca has brought some Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas level of somber.
But Mama,
sadness.
I put a hole in your washtub.
Jeez.
So, yeah,
Paul
so here we
would
go.
Have done that.
Can I be River Bottom Nightmare Band? They kicked so much ass.
They were good. They were very scary. So,
yes.
So we're here. This is our final episodes of the year. So we're going to get into – we're going to do both. I did both. My top 10 horror movies and my top 10 favorite things about this year.
Yep.
Favorite things, you know what it was? It reminded me of last Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's
where we did
so.
Our five things we were thankful for.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So basically it's 10 of those.
All
it's
rolled
10
into
titles. It's going to get ugly, I think. It's going to get very controversial.
Oh, yes.
And Twin Peaks will be my number one.
And
again, it's a rollover. First time ever a rollover.
Wow.
I brought a bell for whenever Elric gets out of lines. Just,
oh, nice. Well,
yeah guys, there were some questions that I had about the rules, but I decided I'll hold them until
we'll
actually dive in. Until we actually dive in.
Let's get into our usual.
The cool thing, though, is no one here is a film critic anymore. Because you guys aren't working for sites. No one's here.
It's
so
true.
So therefore, rules don't really apply. Because then
film critics
stick to that whole, oh, well, this is, you know, whatever.
That's very true.
Because they're being paid to see movies. We're not.
Yeah.
Yes. And we can't stick with, I assume Ryan's not doing any Blumhouse titles. I'm not doing any Dread
ones.
Let's just
get that out of the way. Yeah. There's no Halloween.
No.
There's no Truth or Dare.
For you.
There's not enough for me.
Could
for
be
me.
For somebody
off
else
record,
in the room.
Off record. Off record. Where would you rank it? Like, where would you place Halloween in your list? Come on, just off record.
I mean, if I was, this is, I would get yelled at. I'm going to get yelled at regardless.
We're
I'm
not on air. No one's recording. Just give it to us. I just want to hear.
But you like
it, right?
So it should get interesting. Yes, we're going to talk about what we've seen in the interim, but let's get some plugs out of the way. How about, Again, social media wise and on iTunes, Stitcher, all these places that you can find the show.
Yep.
If you've been listening for a while, if you haven't rated or reviewed, please do.
Yep.
We've been hearing a lot lately from people that maybe are not a fan.
Yeah.
And that's totally cool.
Wait, have we been hearing a lot or just that one? Is it getting worse? What's going on?
No, that's nothing.
Quality
nothing.
Control.
It's
not
totally
systemic
fine.
Yet, guys.
Listen, unanimously positive, I'd be very concerned.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And so
that's called growth.
Growth. Yeah. So let's hear from you. If you can, rate and review all over the place.
Yes. That'd
be wonderful.
Please.
Or this will be the last episode. So if you don't like the show, just stay quiet.
Elric, we threatened that once before.
We'll walk away from the mics.
Yeah. Well, we did change studios for a day.
A couple other shout-outs. Shout-out to Ernie, our sound engineer,
who has stuck
with us.
The man.
Through this madness.
Since the Jordan Peele episode.
That was your first one. That's like 100 and some episodes ago, right?
That was before Get Out came out. I remember going, I wonder if this will be any good. That was cool.
That was episode 16.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ernie has been with us since episode 16, and this is 126.
Yep. Yeah.
You are a madman. Thank you.
You owe us, dude. You've been carrying your ass.
I brought cookies.
Becca brought cookies.
But yeah, socials, reviews, let us know what you think.
Which of our socials do you think we need the biggest boost?
Facebook.
Facebook. Yeah. We can always
Facebook
use
a huge group, though.
Well,
the Shockwaves fan group, but our actual Shockwaves page.
But liking the Facebook page, where we post updates and fun stuff and polls and whatnot. Our Instagram is what it is.
It's fine.
I'll tell you, our Snapchat is sexy as fuck. I think I'm the only one who uses our Snapchat, but man.
And you're also the only one on it. You follow it and no one else watches.
Find Shockwaves on Tinder, Grindr, MySpace. <Yeah.
laughs> Date the Shockwaves too.
Wow.
All right. So, Rob.
Oh.
What have you seen?
I left on a cliffhanger last time because I had been examining the Scream Factory Urban Legend movies. I had our buddy Josh Miller over. He's my partner in pain in terms of picking the most questionable things. And he really wanted to see Urban Legend 2 before I saw the first one again. He's like, no, let's go to 2. I just watched the first one. I was like, all right. My memory of Urban Legend 2, or a.k.a. Urban Legend Final Cuts, was that I really liked this movie a lot. I saw it theatrically back in, 2000, and I remember being like, it was pretty good, and it takes place at a film school, whatever. This movie is hilarious in the sense that it's like, when I had no context whatsoever for filmmaking or film school or any of that stuff, it was like, this is what happens, I guess. Right. I forgot how out of control this movie is. I don't want to give away too much because, yes, it takes place at a film school. Yes, there's some fun characters in there, but
is Joey from Blossom in it?
He's totally in it.
Okay,
yes.
that's my only memory of that movie is that he's in it.
He's kind of a swarmy, I don't understand what he does. I think he thinks he's an agent, but he's still at film school, so he's not an agent yet. He's just always on the phone trying to make deals. Yeah. And I'm like,
that's what they think producers are.
Exactly. Okay. But I got to tell you, so as you can imagine from, because even though this 2000 is still the 90s style slasher trend, and where there's always a killer or two that has a motivation, the motivation behind the killer of Urban Legend 2 is so amazing. And by amazing, I mean so mind blowing.
Not crazier than Cherry, is it? Cherry Falls?
I love Cherry Falls.
Because Cherry Falls
is not as crazy as Cherry Falls.
Cherry Falls gets so crazy.
It's not crazy. It's just almost illogical.
The
lengths that somebody would go to murder a bunch of kids at school. They do have the security guard from Part 1 returns, which I totally forgot about. And the documentary stuff on there, it's a lot of the same producers and people from the first movie. But it wasn't as good as the first one because obviously everybody involved with the first one had a lot of affinity for it. This is a weird one that I wish went a little more honest because basically they were all kind of like, yeah, so we did the second one right away. You know, we had a big success, super huge hit. And somebody early on said, yeah, let's do a film school. And that idea stayed the whole way through.
It's funny because that doesn't go with the idea of Urban Legends at all, really.
No, so it's weird because there's a few things they skate over. One, why Jamie Blanks didn't return. They're like super vague about it. Now, I looked at the timeline. I think he was doing Valentine at that point. So maybe he had just gone on to go do another movie and just didn't want to do a sequel. I don't know what the case is, but they kind of skate over it. However, it was up between I believe, the DP of the first one, who really wanted to do it, and John Ottman.
Who's a composer.
Who's a composer. Yes. They wanted to give him his debut, his directorial debut. And they chose John Ottman, and the DP still stayed on to DP it.
Oh, weird.
So there's a lot of
him.
Well,
he really believed in the project.
Until you see the shots.
Well, no, but then but you watch this making of documentary, and like they keep throwing this information out, and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, that's great.
And they keep talking about it. So like, I just wish that maybe they were a little more open and honest about it. They did say the one interesting facet is, to me, my favorite scene, which is an urban legend, is pretty early in the movie. They do a take on the whole kidney thieves thing. Mm. And
that's right, yeah.
That scene was added after test screenings and written by the writer of the first urban legend. Because he didn't – basically the writer of the first one was like, they asked me, but I kind of used up every urban legend I could think of in one. And so like I couldn't
– got nothing else.
Couldn't think of a good sequel right off the bat. The only thing we didn't use was the kidney thieves urban legend, which they ended up adding after the fact. And it's right. Funny because that is kind of the strongest – scene early on in the movie that keeps you there, like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And then they go back to the filmmaking stuff, which is just added. I mean, there's a – I'll tell you this because I don't think it gives away too much, but they actually do the plot device where there's a character that gets murdered or dies. He doesn't get murdered. He dies, and then the next scene, his twin brother shows up that nobody ever knew about, and the actor's still in the movie. You're like, wait, what? They're going for the twin brother angle?
Yeah, it's bad.
All right.
Oh, man.
It is quite something. I still had fun with it. It's just not – I enjoyed it when it came out. Now I enjoy it on a much campier level. And again, it makes me appreciate the first one much more.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We should do an episode. This is like a through line. It's like Ryan pitches future episodes.
That we should won't do, an episode, because we have no time.
I know. We should do an episode in which it's horror movies about – film students or filmmakers.
Right,
like Scream 3 comes to mind, Popcorn comes to mind.
Some good one, like Tathis, you know, or whatever it is. Yeah. Thesis, that one.
Thesis. Oh, that was a great movie. That was Italian or Spanish.
But just about how they approach, how they kind of peel back the layer and what they think, you know, how it all works, or how the enthusiasm of film students. And because I watched Urban Legend when I was fresh out of film school.
Yeah. Yep.
And I was like, I was never like
that. Yeah. Yeah. The amount of money that they put into their short films is just like, I don't know if you could get a plane built inside you know.
Oh, seriously? I was like, my USC students have like crazy budgets, but they can't build planes.
No, there's some fun. I mean, and it was funny because Josh, who I was watching, was in film school when the movie came out. He was like, wait a minute. This isn't what it was like.
He's on to us. Seriously.
So, but that's fun. Yeah. And it's funny because Scream 3, same time, 2000. Mm-hmm. They were both in 2000. I don't know. I guess everyone was like, how meta can we go at this point?
Oh, yeah.
Let's go to film school where they're making movies.
We'll get lucky and John Ottman will do It Follows 2 and set it in a film school. We're just waiting, John. Wherever. Who's the composer of that? Disaster Space?
Disaster Piece. Yeah. He should go direct a movie.
Exactly.
That'd be hilarious.
That's about as logical. So, all right.
And quick side note, the House of the Dead, aka Alien Zone, kind of liked it.
Yeah.
I watched it after your last episode. Yeah. I knew what I was getting into.
What was your favorite segment?
Favorite segment?
First, right?
I don't know. I kind of liked the Saw one where it's like the guy being mean and then he just has to like go through
somebody who just randomly.
That could be a Christmas story, actually. That'd make a good Christmas story.
I thought it was pretty like kind of fun.
Did you like the kids though? They're creepy.
I actually liked all the segments because you braced me for all of them. So even the one with the sleuths that was quote unquote long.
Yes.
Didn't feel that bad because I was expecting it to be like really long. I thought it was the last segment.
Right.
And so I was expecting it to be like, oh my God, there's like an hour left in this movie. I can't. But it wasn't. But it like ended sooner than I anticipated.
Oh, good. Good. I'm glad.
And I was like, all right, there's one more. That's right. So no, I kind of liked it.
And they're funny. The sleuths
are
good.
They're cool. The sleuths are really funny. Yeah.
I'm in. I put it in my queue when you guys were talking about it last week. So
pretty fun.
I'm in now.
Just don't expect too much.
Yeah.
Curb your enthusiasm. Which way are we going? This way? I saw the Brazilian horror film, Good Manners. Which I hadn't seen.
Oh, I liked that.
I missed that
one.
When I was at festivals.
That was really sweet.
It's quite a sweet natured film. There's a number of foreign films that will just narrowly be missing my list. There's like five or six that are around that 10 spot, and this is one of those films that I'd place around there. Really nice emotional story. It's a werewolf. It feels like a different take on the werewolf lore. It's like it's also playing with like race and class in Brazil
And sexuality.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, all these elements that are interesting. I don't know enough about their culture, but some of it I can kind of approximate. But it's a woman who is applying for a job as a nanny for a baby that's coming soon. A single woman who lives in an upwardly mobile home, and they kind of get along great. And as their relationship grows and it even becomes sexual, one night she sees the pregnant woman, her eyes are kind of glowing yellow, and it's a full moon, and she's kind of just like out and about walking through the streets doing weird stuff, and she follows her, and one day sees her like eating, I think it's a cat or something, and you go, oh, okay, there's something weird going on. They have a relationship, and then you don't want to go too deep, because there isn't a lot of story. It's more about the way they play it out. It's definitely treated more like an emotional relationship tender movie than it is a horror movie, but the horror punctuations are really quite horrific and really well done. But you end up finding out a little bit. The backstory is really fun. It's almost kind of like Santa's Sleigh, where they have the stop motion part. This has a, I guess, illustrative sequence.
It looks like it was drawn. It looks like hand drawn,
but it's really it's actually sweet. The poster. If you look up the poster, whoever did the poster did the hand draw.
It reminded me of
nice style.
In Hedwig and the Angry Inch, when they do the origin of love sequence, it goes over to a hand drawn style and then comes back, and it looked a lot like that.
It was playful, and you see it's fun because you see what the woman did. She went on a date with some guy, and they made love in a car, and then she looks out her window and there's a beast, a wolf, and she shoots at it, and so that's just one little flash, and so you go, oh, I see where this story's going to head now with her child, and then it goes in a really surprising way. The second half's quite different than the first half. It's an interesting film. I'd take risk on it. Again, it unfortunately is just another film that's like 2 hours 12, 2 hours 13, and you're like, you don't need that extra time, especially this one, because there's a lot of just people hanging out and getting to know each other, and I feel like they could have streamlined it more. But it's a nice film. I actually thought it was cool, and it did feel original. I don't think I've ever seen the character dynamics before, to be honest.
I could have used a lot more of what happens in the third act and move that up, like make that the halfway point. And if you see the movie, you'll understand what I'm talking about. But it felt far more interesting with this added element to it.
Yep.
But I really like that.
The one downside is the art probably won't reach a lot of horror fans, because it's very illustrative, cartoony. Seems like if I was just passing it, I'd go, oh, is that an animation or something? Yeah. I wouldn't even for a second think I was looking at a horror film if I was actually looking for the title. And so, which is a bit of a shame, because it's a cool poster, but I think a lot of people will pass it up.
And the title, Good Manners, does not lend itself to horror in any capacity.
I'm trying to think what that even really, okay, I have to think about the title in relation to the movie.
I assume that it was the two of them at the top. When they're really getting acquainted to each other.
Or even then, in the latter half.
Oh, you're right. When she's now the mother. Yeah, you're right.
So anyway, but if you like these kind of films, you might like it. It's a good film.
That was Good Manners. I did a binge last night of a couple movies, but I want to start at the top with a film called Leprechaun Returns.
Oh, shit.
When's
it from?
So Leprechaun Returns, strangely, did not appear on iTunes. It appeared on Amazon for its debut.
Wow.
This is directed by Stephen Kostansky, who is one of the co-directors of The Void, which everybody loved from last year.
I didn't.
It didn't have much substance to it, but it was fun to look at for an hour and a half.
Let me put it this way. I'd like to see his Leprechaun movie.
Well, you definitely should see his Leprechaun movie. This is a sequel to the very first film, in which they remove all the other entries in the Leprechaun franchise.
Oh, shit. Aniston back?
No, but Mark Holton is.
Mark Holton is back.
Plays Francis from Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
Mark Holton is back. And it's written by Susan Kelly, who is a neighbor of a friend. So I'm going to have to leave a little gift basket as a thank you. But basically the story is Jennifer Aniston's daughter.
Oh, wait. So her character comes back.
No. Well, no. Jennifer Aniston's character is dead.
Just as a plot point.
Yeah. But her daughter – it's not a spoiler, please. But her daughter
– Don't spoil Leprechaun Returns, guys.
You actually pushed him into that. Because you're like, so she's back? And he's
I think we would all know if Jennifer Aniston was back for a freaking Leprechaun movie, guys.
I was more of saying her character has returned.
Her character's daughter, Lila, is returning to the old house from the first Leprechaun, because she and her friends are going to spruce the house up and turn it into a sorority house. Because just down the lane, there is a giant college campus. But they are choosing a much cheaper route and basically going to you know, gussy up this house and make it livable. One of their best friends is super crunchy and green, and so she's trying to make it like a self-sustaining sorority house. And of course, outdoors, there's a well. And it's the very well that our leprechaun fell into at the end of the first film and died. Spoiler, I guess.
You know how much that sounds like Killer Party? If you, the storyline of Killer Party, I think they're trying to start Elric, a sorority in an old house.
Well, Elric, I mean, like,
yeah, but
the,
then they do organized dancing and it gets weird. Is that Killer Party, right?
Yeah, I think
that's the Killer Party. Yeah. And then it gets weird.
Yeah. And then it gets weird. But anyways, Mark Holton is very apprehensive about bringing this poor woman to the sorority house. Da 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 da. Leprechaun comes back and he is more badass than ever.
Same actor?
Not the same actor. It's not Warwick Davis.
It's Lyndon Porco.
Yeah. And he's actually
looks good.
He's really good. He's really fine. I mean, like, listen, guys, when I talk about the Leprechaun series and I talk about the Leprechaun film, let's just set it at a low bar and then we work our way up. So already,
why are you doing that to Leprechaun, right?
I mean,
so where's the land on your 10?
I'm actually really glad that we are talking about films we saw, because I really wanted to talk about Leprechaun Returns. Right. It's actually cleverly written. There's some really great one-liners. Uh-huh. There's a lot of great practical effects that work really well. The leprechaun is a lot of fun. It's actually kind of clever. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Does it get for more sadistic or more
comics?
It's still funny.
Very fun. I mean, like, the thing is, like, I take a very, very personal pleasure in seeing the leprechaun have to deal with shoes. Because much like the first film, he's like, oh, the shoes. And then, like, he's like fixing up the shoes. There's a scene where he gets thrown into it. That's his obsession. Yeah. These girls are hiding in a closet. And then they come spilling out of the closet. And leprechaun's like, oh, and he's all surprised. But all the shoes are spilling out. And he's like, oh, how could you leave these shoes out? And he starts putting them away. Meanwhile, everybody else is running away. Mm-hmm. But because he's got this one hang up, he's allowing everybody to escape. And he finds a pair of Crocs. And he goes, oh, these won't work. And he throws them into trash. And it was just dumb and fun. And I thought that it had a lot of energy to it. And it's just, it's really amusing. And I thought it was like a nice late fun addition to 2018 that I didn't expect, because honestly, when I saw Leprechaun Returns being announced, I was like, okay, cool. You can find it on Amazon right now, but not on iTunes for some reason.
What's the Leprechaun one Drew Daywalt made? Red Flower?
Red Clover.
Red Clover. I remember thinking that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I saw it.
But yeah, so this was Lionsgate's way of just erasing everything in the series, including that one that they did for Leprechaun Rising.
I can't remember the name of it. It was the last one. Origins?
The co-writer's going to fucking kill me right now. I'm sorry, Harris. Anyways, Leprechaun Returns.
I recommend
it.
So I checked out Housewife, which is the new movie from the Baskin guy.
Yeah, and?
It's not as exciting as Baskin was.
What's wrong with
you? Oh, I was not as into it as I was Baskin. And a lot of people did not love Baskin, but I was one of the people who was like, no, this is amazing. And it just keeps getting more bonkers. And what the hell is that thing crawling on the floor? And I loved Baskin so much. I thought it was a trip. This one kind of began really strong and ended really strong, and then there was a bunch of stuff in the middle, and I don't really know what happened there. It was
going to mansplain. It's a cult. And
I knew what happened there because I watched the fucking movie.
Like a throw cookie.
Then you don't need me to. That's all you had to say.
It's a girl, two sisters. Mom is in a cult, so we're starting out when they're kids. Mom kills one of them, and this all happens in the first 5 minutes. Mom kills one of the sisters and then kills
how does she kill her?
Don't do that.
Really?
Don't set me up for spoilers, dude.
No, but that one's like in the
okay. Right.
But
it's such an interesting death that makes the whole movie worth watching.
You're making this really hard.
You know, there was a poll in the group of who spoils movies the most of all four of us, but you still love them?
Yeah.
I'm not going to
disclose
the results.
Was it Elric?
It was you and Elric.
Oh, see, it's both of us together.
No, Becca was in the lead. You were second. Ryan was third.
See, I'm not going to say.
Then I can push Becca how they die.
See, that's why I'm not doing it, because even that is a bit of a twist, and I'm not revealing the twist. Right. But anyway, mom kills one of the daughters and the dad, so then it's just the daughter who is still alive. And now we fast forward, like, 30-some years, and she's an adult, and she's pregnant, and one of her friends shows up and is like, hey, you should come join this crazy new age cult that I'm in, but it's really flashy and kind of like Scientology, but way cooler. Because it has umbrellas, and a guy who dances on stage in a very kind of like,
yeah,
he's fun and zany. And he comes out and says, you don't understand your self-worth. You there in the audience, I am going to get inside your head and release all your demons. And then the next like 40 minutes are a combination of flashback, flash forward. I don't even know what happens. Hmm. And then somehow at the end, the cult shows up. The cult becomes more involved. Elric, what am I missing here?
I didn't know what the fuck was going on the whole movie. I actually needed you to explain it to me. That's why I was provoking you. So you could. I know. I thought the first 5 minutes was cool.
First 5 minutes was
stylish.
Great. Really cool opening.
And Baskin's an interesting movie because it's like mm-hmm. a police procedural that then goes to hell, literally.
That's what I liked about Baskin, is it felt like it had kind of a plot line, and then the third act, they're literally in hell.
Yeah, the opening's shocking in this. It's fun. And then the middle I found quite dull. And his style doesn't just quite work with this cult stuff. Just seems like a bit of gobbledygook.
Plus, there was a lot of flashbacks and flash forwards. And is this real? I don't think that's real, but this is real.
And
nope,
awkward
no, it's not.
Performances, because you've got a lot of people being either dubbed or in English who obviously aren't first language English speakers. So if had it all been subtitled, I think it would have felt more fluid. But because like one guy's probably Turkish and one guy is probably something else, and it just felt a little awkward. But the last act, well, the last few minutes, is got kind of bizarro Lovecraftian stuff. So you're like, if this was the whole movie, awesome, but it's a little late.
Yeah,
I don't know, it's just a weird movie. Like I said, it's one of the weirder movies I've seen this year.
It began strong and it ended strong, but I really
where did you see this again?
It's on Amazon.
Is it on Amazon? Like a $4 rent.
Yeah, I want to see it.
It's definitely worth checking out. I mean, it was still an interesting watch, but there was a lot that happened in the middle where I was like, I don't know what's going on, I'm gonna go get popcorn. And
his short on another new one this year, that Field Guide to Evil, the one that Ann Timpson and
The anthology.
I was watching it at the Knoxville film, and the only reason I haven't reviewed it on here is it halfway through the film something happened and the DCP broke, and we didn't get to ever watch the rest of the movie. But his short on that was really good, probably the most disturbing of all of them. Huh. And his like horror really works in these short bursts of like visceral like hell.
Yeah.
But over the course of the drama, I think is maybe where he needs to make maybe a new screenwriter. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's
when this one goes to hell, and it wasn't exactly hell, but when it gets to like the Baskin level of like craziness, then I was like, oh, this is fucking brilliant. I'm so in.
Well, I'm looking at the poster, there's tentacles on it.
Yeah,
so
it gets real Lovecraftian.
At the end. The rest is a bit of it. Yeah, but it's, it's interesting.
All right, Rob.
Way to blow. I didn't spoil that one. That was
wait, wait. It's on the poster, so you can't spoil anything that's on a poster.
Rob, anything else?
No, well, not really. I saw King Cohen, which I know has been brought up on the show before. Great documentary. A lot of fun stories. It's Larry Cohen. It made me interested to see one or two of the movies that I missed out on, like Original Gangsters. I never saw that one.
I don't think I've ever seen either.
Yeah. With Fred Williamson.
Yeah.
So King Cohen's great if you haven't seen that yet. I just want to pimp to be shameless for a moment. Obviously, last week we were in the holiday spirit promoting Becca's movie.
Yes, Sleigh Bells.
Hopefully you see by now.
Yeah.
Yes, we have to give a shout out to Spooky Dan Walker, who's a good friend of all of ours, we've known for many years, and who has done the monumental task of completing and putting out his first movie, which is Sleigh Bells, and that's out now on VOD and Blu-ray and all that jazz. And it's just,
it's fun.
As he would say, it's silly and it's fun. It's three cosplaying girls with Barry Bostwick as Santa Claus, who kind of steals it, up against Krampus.
Yep.
It's simple, lean, mean, 77 minutes. So
I didn't know he had Barry Bostwick.
Yeah, Barry Bostwick's great.
He's wonderful in it.
And Krampus, is a Krampus in it?
The Krampus is a practical monster. He looks great.
Yep.
So anyway.
Vinny
Guastini. So it's fun. Obviously I helped put it out, so I was hoping somebody else would have brought it up. So it didn't seem
we got caught
shameless.
Up. We got caught up.
Anyways, congrats, Spooky, and check it out.
Yeah, very proud.
Last one, and I actually really dug this, and I haven't heard a single person talk about this year. It will just not be on my list because it's a Warren subgenre, but that is The Night Eats the World, the French film.
Somebody just mentioned this online.
I'd seen it on a couple lists of, hey, make sure you see everything, and I was like, okay, zombies already. I'm like, no, I don't think I can do it. Yeah. I pushed play, and I was really struck by it just approaches everything that's Warren with a slightly fresh angle. It's very focused, so it's basically one guy in a Parisian – it's interesting because it's all in English – It's a Paris Shaw film. He's in a he goes to an apartment at the start that has a house party, and it's clearly his ex girlfriend. He's gone to pick up a bunch of tapes of either music slash spoken word stuff that he did, and she's moved on. She's with some other guy, and she, he keeps waiting for her to have time to talk to him. And she's like, "Just wait here." "No, I don't go. I really want you to stay." And he's like, "Okay, I'll wait here." And he kind of hangs out, and the party's really authentic. It feels very real. Like it's got. I really like the way this is made. I've got to say. He then eventually finds a little side room because he just isn't social, and he's waiting for her and feeling kind of awkward. He finds like her office, and he goes into the office and finds his tapes, and he kind of gets sleepy, and he might take a drug or alcohol, I can't remember, and he sits in a chair and falls asleep. And when he wakes up, he opens the door, and there's blood fucking everywhere, and realizes there's been an entire massacre the night before, and now he's like maybe the last person on Earth, slash whatever's happened. And you know, he opens the front door and sees his ex-girlfriend, a couple other, and they start charging him. He's like, fuck, and closes the door and locks himself in. And then it becomes a movie that largely follows this guy alone in this apartment called a house, or it's an apartment first, but then he realizes he can go from room to room and, you know, get all the resources he needs. And it's funny because as somebody who has been watching the only one on the show who's still even watching The Walking Dead with a lot of, you know, I do have life regrets. it's fun to see something that is just so, I'm really tired of watching it in The Walking Dead. Like I don't know why I haven't stopped. But in this, I was like, no, this is interesting because the character felt fresh. His perception of what he was much more realistic to like what we would probably try to do in this situation. And then it just, what's really fun, the couple things that are super original about this, in my opinion, and shows why zombies still work because it's what you do with them and how you project them, is there are a lot of them. So it looks like a low budget film a lot of the time. And then whenever there's apocalyptic scenes or zombie scenes, it actually looks like a very high budget. It looks like they must have had money to make this, those sequences. What's so cool is they're completely silent. One is trapped in the elevator between the two floors with bars. So he talks to him and almost becomes friends, but not really. And they open their mouth like they want to bite you. They look vicious and nothing comes out of their mouth. No sound at all. And it's really eerie. And it changes the entire context of the zombie lore because we're so used to the brains it's just unnerving. And when there's hundreds of them outside, you hear nothing.
That's cool.
And I was like, that's cool. And what's cooler for the nerds who, and you'll get this reference, the main one who's trapped in the thing, the only zombie you kind of get to know is the star of Holy Motors.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and who's already one of the coolest, Denis Levant or whatever from, who's been in tons of French films. But if you've seen Holy Motors, you already now would want to see this movie. Go, he plays a zombie who doesn't talk, who's kind of his friend. It's kind of fucking rad. And then there's a bigger picture like of him. What will he do? Will he just stay there forever or will he seek out? And there's some interesting interactions. But I got to say, this one of all the last kind of films I watched towards the end really surprised me. And I wouldn't be surprised if in the long run, it's kind of, you know, like a nice surprise like The Battery. It's a fresh spin on something. That lead character is not as likable as Jeremy is. That's one of the reasons that movie works. This guy's not meant to be that, you know, he's just a fairly atypical 30-year-old guy. But it's an interesting movie. Yeah, I would definitely, and it's free on Amazon right now, I believe.
It's on Amazon Prime.
It's on Amazon Prime.
So I think it's free. And yeah, I was
it is solid.
It.
It's, I mean, like, that's always a challenge. It's like whenever I get writers and directors in and they kind of pitch a zombie movie, or I hear, what do you want to do? Would Blumhouse ever do a zombie movie? And the challenge is always, what could we ever do that tops what an audience gets on a weekly basis, in their own homes? What would make them come out of the theater, come out of their house into a theater to go see another zombie movie? What are you going to actually offer?
Yeah.
I saw this movie earlier this year and I really enjoyed it.
This was a surprise though, because also the artwork again was something that I think I have seen this art before and I went right by. It's like black and red.
It looks like the As Above, So Below poster.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. The thing I'd love to know, and you probably know, it's probably just for foreign sales, but the choice to go English speaking in a very French film was kind of surprising. It worked.
It
wasn't like the other film where I could tell the performances were uneven.
I might be able to get that answer for you.
Okay,
let's do it. The night eats the world.
The night eats the world. Yeah,
nice.
One of another kind of like last entry into 2018 that I see a lot of people raving about and talking about on Twitter because IFC is so good at promoting their stuff on Twitter. So it got me to watch The Clove Hitch Killer with Dylan McDermott.
Did you miss when we talked about it on here?
Yeah. I don't think he was on that week.
I don't think.
I started in Knoxville when I came back.
Because that may or may not be on my list.
I guarantee you it is on my list.
Got it.
I didn't. It's my second runner-up, so right, I will discuss.
You can talk about it now, though. Yeah.
I really dug it.
Yeah.
The trailer makes it look like a typical – here's what my perception of it from the trailer was, oh, my gosh, there was a serial killer that terrorized our town 10 years ago. I'm a teenage boy. I might have insight as to who was the killer. Oh my God, it might be my dad. Mm-hmm. Now let's see that play out. And I was like, okay, that feels very point A to point B to point C. I got it. What this movie does so well is it messes with structure at a very integral part in the film. The narrative structure is all off balance, which was really interesting. And I kind of got mad at it at first because you're in the moment with this kid, Tyler, who's played by Charlie Plummer, and you're in it for the first half, and then all of a sudden we jump perspectives to Dylan McDermott's character, who's always been the suspected killer. And I was like, no, wait a minute, this is a cheat because I'm with this kid for the whole time. I'm already emotionally invested in him. But then what the movie devilishly does, it gets me emotionally connected to Dylan McDermott in a way, in a very warped way. So I was like, oh my God. But then, I mean, you're always with the teenage boy. But really interesting film. I don't necessarily think it was scary. I mean, it's a very good kind of thriller drama.
I think what I had said on the show, because I was really disappointed with, is it Summer of 88? And to me, it was like that.
Summer of 80.
84.
Yes.
This to me delivered on the plot that had completely. Like that, I loved that part of this film. It didn't have the same '80s aesthetics, of course. I just think Dylan McDermott's so good. And there's a scene, like I could make a list of just my favorite scenes, but there's a scene where you're alone with Dylan McDermott's character, and you get to watch him how he is when he's not being watched.
Yes,
and it's probably my favorite thing I saw this year because he's just going to town.
Yes,
it's fucking hilarious.
He's funny.
It's kind of creepy. And so I just think it's a really smart movie.
Yeah,
and the performances are really well measured. It's a very restrained movie. You know?
Very restrained performances. I think Dylan McDermott did a really great job. I think Charlie Plummer did a very good job. It's just maybe it was dialed down, like in terms of like an energy level that I didn't expect. But
I think that's obviously the guy's vision. Yeah, it's like
that's definitely a stylistic choice.
I went in not having seen the trailer and also thinking it was going to be bad because I was at a festival and somebody's like, "And the Clovehitch Killer from IFC Fit Midnight." I was like, "Oh, what's this going to be?" And then we all looked at each other and go, "That was kind of the best movie we saw at the festival." Like everyone kind of uniformly was like, "That's one of the best things we saw."
But yeah, it's very well done. I think Duncan Skiles, the director.
Yeah, it looks like he had been an editor on other.
He was like an editor, maybe done some short films. I apologize if you're listening and it's incorrect, but in terms of kind of like a first feature, it's very well done.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
So I rewatched Demons last night.
Yeah.
Baba's original. And every single time I watch it, I remind myself how good the soundtrack is. Like, I always know it's Goblin, you know, it's got some really good stuff. And then I'm always like, oh, that's Motley Crue. I mean, like, it's lesser known early Crue, but it's still Crue. And so it just kicks ass. I love that movie so much so that I have a patch for it on my jacket. But it's definitely, that's one of those that I revisit every couple of years. Yeah, and it's solid energy the whole way through. So much so, so I put Marnie to bed at like 9 o'clock. Like Strummer was out super quick. I put Marnie to bed at 9 o'clock and started it at like 9:15. And it starts punching almost immediately. Like within the first 15 minutes, there's like an eye gouging scene and then it just goes from there. And then the teeth pop out, literally teeth popping out. That's not a spoiler or anything. They literally pop out of the gums. And Marnie comes out of her bedroom and doesn't even blink at what is on the screen. And it's some type of crazy viscera. And she just looks and goes, "Mom, can you turn down the TV? The screaming's keeping me awake." And then she just walks right back into her fucking room. And I was like, my God, this kid.
You should have had the steel mask and just turned around to Marnie and give her a duff stare.
But the screaming was keeping her up. But it starts at like an 8. It amps up to 10 and it stays there for the rest of the movie just the whole time. So I just love that movie and revisit it regularly.
And then you got to get into number two for that cool soundtrack. I love that soundtrack.
I love both soundtracks.
Yeah. And I've talked on the show before about how two was one of the few movies that I actually found haunting. I saw two before one. I saw two at an older girl, a girl I used to take dance with. Like she was like in middle school and I was probably in fourth grade and she had a slumber party when I was a kid. And I went to it and we watched Demons 2 at it. And the scene where the demon comes out of the television, like that is one of the few horror films I actually remember having nightmares
about. You could do a whole show on like any movie you saw the sequel of before you saw the first one is way fucking creepier when you're young because you have no context. So I think I've told this one before, but I saw Bride of Reanimator before Reanimator. We're sitting at the same thing, like three guys at some sleepover. We're like 12, 11 or whatever. And that it's just a disembodied head saying, "You bastards, you did this." And we all looked at each other like, "What the hell is this movie?" And it, so I do think there's an interest. Like, imagine seeing Nightmare on Elm Street 3 before 1. It would just totally fuck you up. So I think that could be a fun Kinder trauma experiment.
I still consider Demons 2 scarier than Demons 1. And Demon 1, it's so much more batshit crazy, like the amount of viscera and ooze and teeth falling out.
Well, 2's got more comedy,
too. Yeah, 2 is comedic. And it's got, I'll call it a Running Man aesthetic, where it's very kind of security cameras at night and people running around and things like that, because it's all about the demon zone, the security zone. And then it goes to the party. But yeah, I still consider 2 to be scarier.
I love it. I love them both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just remember, what was it, the fitness guy in part 2?
He was the pimp in part one,
but there's a moment, but I think it's part two. He's like, "Come on, we need to help these guys." And he's like in the garage and they're starting to pile up. Like,
oh, he's amazing in part one too.
Oh yeah.
He's like, "That's Asia? A friend of mine." And then he's like punching the demons because of it.
Isn't Asia in 1 or 2?
She's in 2.
She's in 2. That's her first role ever.
Yeah. She's at the birthday party scene in the beginning.
And then technically Church is part 3, right? Like technically.
Sort of.
Yeah.
The church
moves a lot slower.
Yeah, but when you see the creatures, they look very similar.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But I love it because in it, there's absolutely, they're demons. We all know that they're demons, but there is no establishing of they're from hell, there's from heaven, there's no devil. They are just, it's almost zombie-like in the way that the disease is passed along. Yeah. They just are.
Oh, well, I mean, fun. I always saw Wreck as a direct descendant of demons.
Which I Wreck can totally see.
Yeah. I mean, I always thought that demons heavily influenced both of those movies in terms of the mythology of, it's kind of like a supernatural disease or something like that.
Because the way in Demons 1 that it gets passed from the screen to the audience is real muddy. It's like somebody on the screen gets scratched, and at the same time, one of the girls in the audience gets a mysterious scratch on her face. And then she leaves because she's like, "It just won't stop bleeding." Yeah. And then she gets to the bathroom and her teeth fall out. And you're like, "What the fuck just happened, man?" And then that guy starts punching people, and it just goes from there.
The punk rockers of Demons, I love them so much. I want to be in that car. I want to hang out with them. They're like, get the cocaine all over the car.
Cocaine off the nipple with a razor blade.
With a razor blade? Oh, it's so hot.
And she's just sitting there, let him, and then she's like, "Ouch. No, keep going." It's just bizarre.
It's very weird. It's very weird.
Yeah, it's a trap.
We should get Greta. I know she lives in L.A. somewhere. So.
She doesn't live in L.A.
What? Not anymore?
She's like in New York, isn't she?
I'm not sure.
I thought she did live in L.A.
No, I tried for Killer POV, but not in the state.
Damn. Oh, well. Back to nothing, guys. I guess that's our show.
Well, there is a damn fine looking blue of Demons, so, and Demons 2. Yeah. I have both.
Synapse.
So, highly recommend checking them out.
All right. Anything else, guys?
Are we on to
the year that was 2018?
Are we jumping right in? Are we taking a break? Or what do we do? We're just going into it?
Let's
I'm ready.
All right, let's take a moment.
Let's do it live.
Let's take a moment with a word from our sponsors.
There you go.
Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by Shudder. You've heard us talk about this premium streaming video service quite a bit, so if you don't have it, what the hell are you waiting for? It's $4.99 a month or $49.99 for the year. It's easy to navigate and curated by a pretty stellar team. This is the place you turn to for a wide range of horror flicks like Silver Bullet, Dust Devil, and City of the Living Dead, or thrillers like the newly added Double Lover, which I'm long overdue to see, Cold Hell, and Misery. You Might Be the Killer, Amsterdam's Silent Night, Deadly Night, and Maniac have recently joined their library, which grows from month to month. Seriously, don't be left alone in the dark on this one. To try Shudder for free for 30 days, go to shudder.com/podcast and use the promo code WAVES.
Tonight's show is also brought to you by Fright Rags. Fright Rags is the number one source for horror t-shirts with specially curated collections created by renowned horror artists. They offer the best art and the best quality anywhere. Recently released, celebrate the holidays in horror style with the Krampus-themed holiday decorations, along with reprinted shirts and socks, and brand new beanies to keep you toasty warm. And brand new this week, new collections for Silent Night Deadly Night and Silent Night Deadly Night Part 2, featuring all new designs and reprints of classic shirts. Save an extra 10% with the coupon code SHOCK10. 10% off through December 31st with the coupon code SHOCK10, only at www.fright-rags.com.
Okay, 2018, everybody. Elric, I'm sure you have a lot to talk about. Before we get into that,
wait. I feel
baited. Assume Elric's going to be the contentious
one. I feel
baited
here.
We broke this down into films and then a separate category of kind of favorite things that can qualify as video games, books, comics, whatever, non-film related things. I broke my top 10 down by favorites. Not best films, but films that I found myself talking about a lot, films that I found myself thinking about a lot, films that I will probably watch more than once.
Yep. That's how I did my top 10 films as well, is these are not necessarily ones that I will point to and say these are the best made films of the year. Like Quiet Ones barely missed my list, and I would point to that and be like, Quiet Place. I would point to that and be like, that is a damn good, well-made film that did really well and should have, but it's not one that affected me personally. And so,
whereas I did a completely objective 10 that are objectively the best 10 movies made.
Oh.
There's nothing subjective about my list. It's not my point of view. Right. It's just fact.
Sure.
Guys, that's what we all do.
You know what's funny about it? I've been altering it all the way up until today, because initially when I – because I started last week like pulling my 10 together and catching up and stuff. Initially what bummed me out is that – like normally it's like you get to your top five and you're like, okay, these are movies that I just freaking loved. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel that way about anything on my top 10. Like
really?
There was no ranking in terms of like, you know what I mean? Like initially it was just, no, I just like these a lot, these 10, but I wouldn't rank it and be like, number one is my favorite movie of the year. However, in the last couple of days and thinking about it, I do think that my top five is pretty solid in terms of like, you know what? I do love those five films. Mm-hmm. And again, I kept moving it around and did the same thing. A lot of it's about personal experience, my enjoyment of it. Some of them are a little more obscure, including my 10, just because I've never heard anyone talk about it, or theatrical experiences, or that includes festivals. Mm-hmm. And of course, I stick with anything that actually came out in 2018.
So that was one of my other arguments, or more of questions. So like, it came up for me with the film, The Tigers Are Not Afraid, which has not had a formal release here in the States yet, but it's played a shit ton of festivals. So that's one that I would have put on my list, but I left it off because I don't think it's had a formal distribution release here.
It's
really fucking good.
And the reason being is because, and those could be like follow-ups or look out for, but really it's like people listening to this need to be able to see these movies. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's like, you know, I was before, even when I was in film criticism, I always thought it was pretentious to just have 10 festival movies, because then I would read it and be like, well, I can't see any of these movies.
That was one of our rules at Fangoria, is we wouldn't cover it like that unless it was available or about to be available.
Yeah.
See, I am sticking to that this time, but for when I do the Pure Cinema List, I'm doing a mixture, because there's some movies that I want people to be excited to look forward to. So if it's some big thing that no one can see, but I'm like Tigers Are Not Afraid could use being on these lists more than any movie, because it could actually help it get distributed.
It's
so why
good.
Leave it off, you know? So it's to me like, you know, there's arguments to be made.
Well, I left it off, but everybody should cheer the shit out of Tigers Are Not Afraid, because it was by far one of my favorite films of the year.
I think you should revalue it. Anyway, but yeah, I thought about that one too. It's a good movie. I actually agree with you about one thing that I would say, though, is I feel like this was an excellent year in horror. I remember reading something saying I feel less passionately like, wow, these are my favorites, than I have in other years, but I also have way more than like way more I liked. Like there's a lot of that kind of 3.5 star, like lots of really good horror from lots of different countries, and yet like not many that I'm like, I would fight for this as my favorite movie, which I'm fine with, because I'd rather have a lot of good movies being made. So I think it's a really good year, personally.
I also had questions, and I have this question every year, and I always will, about genre. There was a couple films that I was tempted to put on the list. One in particular, Low Life, I'd have to say was probably not in my top 10, but getting closer.
No, it's a cool movie, but not horror at all.
That one I was kind of like, I don't know. It touches. It's like saying, is Bone Tomahawk horror? Like, I had that on my list.
It's more like saying, is Pulp Fiction horror? Because that's what it's like.
Cell Block. Like, Cell Block came out this year. Is that horror just because of the sheer violence?
I mean, look, I would... One movie I am passionate about that I would put on my list is Upgrade, but I don't think it's a horror movie.
Do you want to know why it's not on mine?
And
I actually thought about this a lot. It's going to be in the top five of my normal film list.
Yeah.
I think it's a fucking rad movie.
Yeah.
And this is how I had to – because I wanted to put on more horror stuff, and I was like, do I put on Upgrade? And then I thought to myself, you know what? no person on earth would put RoboCop in their horror.
It's true.
And it is exactly
and
right. It's got body horror in the way that RoboCop does, but it's pure sci-fi and action.
And that's why I left off Low Life, because I would consider Low Life to be exploitation and violent, but not horror.
Yeah, and again, these are things like who are we, right? Like I believe genre is up to you. Like, you know, what you want to call. So if somebody has Upgrade at the top of the, that's awesome because it's an awesome movie. I just think like that was the one thing going through my brain is like no one I've ever met would call RoboCop horror.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
they would go sci-fi action. So you know, do what you want, and how you build these lists is totally up to you.
Yeah, and then so we'll go one at a time, just kind of counting down from 10, and then we'll go around again to give our 10 things that our 10 favorite things of the year. And by that, it kind of harkens back to our Thanksgiving episode last year where we all picked 5 things we were thankful for. I thought 2018 was really kick-ass in a lot of different ways.
Yep.
That are you know, genre adjacent. We'll get into it in a minute. But yeah, we'll do one and one and keep counting down.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then, yeah.
And the way we're going to break this down is you're going to get 10 through 6 this episode, and then following up next week, you'll get the remains of our list from 5 to 1.
The suspense, baby.
I know.
It'll be a week of suspense.
All right. So we want to kick off with – all right. So what we're doing is films and
films
then things.
Films first and then things.
Yep. So right now I need – it's going to be the number 10 film.
And then
and number 10 thing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'll kick it off.
Yeah, we'll do it. Let's go around the table.
So my number 10 is a movie that I – to be candid, I really aggressively went after myself as a distributor because I saw it. I fell in love with it immediately. It sadly did not get to put it out, but I still want to advocate for it because I've heard no one talk about it, and it's Owen Egerton's Bloodfest.
Yeah.
And the thing is this – I think what happened was this played some festivals, had a lot of buzz earlier this year. It was looking for distribution. It was co-produced by Rooster Teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically they talked to a lot of distributors, myself included, and decided, you know, Rooster Teeth has a big enough following. They're going to put it out themselves. And so they went forward and did that. But the timing of it was almost exactly when another movie came out called Hellfest. And so I think this one got really foreshadowed, kind of buried by Hellfest. Now, I haven't seen Hellfest yet. I know they are similar themes, but the thing is this. I'm a horror comedy guy.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of bummed me out is when this and Hellfest came out, Hellfest seemed to be better reviewed, which is fine. I want to see it because from what I understand, that's a more serious take.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was getting a lot of what I consider unnecessary flack, or people didn't seem to get it or like it as much as I think they should have, because I think they wanted the serious version, which is Hellfest. This movie's a blast. It's a horror comedy. In the opening, basically, you see a little kid who's watching horror movies with his mom, and his mom goes to the kitchen, and he walks in on her getting murdered by a masked killer. And you're like, whoa, what the hell? They catch the guy, they kill the guy right away. And so it's like, oh, but he's been traumatized by this event. Cut to like, whatever, 10, 15 years later. He now works at a video store obsessed with horror movies. And he knows everything there is to know about horror. He watches all of them, all the differences and stuff. And there's a big festival coming up to town called Bloodfest. It's, you know, it's kind of funny. It's one of the jokes where someone's like, oh, you're going to go to that blood feasting. He's like, no, that's a Hirsch Gordon Lewis movie. This is Bloodfest we're talking about. And basically it's like, it's the equivalent of like that Rob Zombie thing where it's like mazes and music and like just all this crazy stuff all at once. And so the ringleader of this event, he sneaks out to go to it. The ringleader is played by the writer-director, Owen Egerton. And basically in the middle of, you know, he's got all these people there. He's got all these cameras shooting it in the middle. He basically stops and he's like, by the way, all these people in the mazes are going to kill you now and we're filming it. And basically he's making like a real life horror movie. And so everybody in all the mazes kind of – so then there's all these like basically obstacles, if you will. So one maze is like, you know, killer clown people, and another is people with chainsaws, and then et cetera is cool little setup there. And our hero, because he knows horror so well, is able to navigate and be kind of like the ringleader. But what's fun about it is there are a ton of famous like cameos. There was one right in the middle who may be playing a superhero next year that really, like, I can't believe they've kept it a secret. And he plays himself.
He does,
so, like, they actually make really funny references to his filmography. And so, anyway, I just had an absolute blast with this movie. I just think it's fun. And it's the sort of party movie that I would watch every Halloween from here on out. And again, I just wanted to give it a little love because I haven't heard a single person talk about it that I know in my circle.
Yeah, it's a pretty fun movie, and it's fun to see Owen, who's the director of the film, play the ringleader of Bloodfest itself. Like, he's the kind of giant showman who's pulling the strings of this place. But it's a horror movie for horror fans at the end of the day. It's just really about the love of the genre, the rules of the genre, and yeah, I agree with you. It's a lot of fun.
Okay. Elric, number 10.
I haven't heard of that one, actually. I mean, I think I've seen the cover, but I hadn't actually heard of it. Number 10 is the hardest spot to fill, ironically, usually, because you've got all the other ones. There's a number. The one that was hard to leave off was that film Luz, because I really like that film, but it's like one of those films that's kind of fringe. So I put something with a similar tone. Luca Guadagnino's Suspiria will take my 10th spot, and it's with a bit of a caveat, which is I don't know how I'm going to feel about this movie long term. And I know it's interesting. I found it very interesting. I definitely haven't. It's the kind of film that could end up bouncing up to like a number two-ish spot in time. Or it could be something that I really forget about in time because of its running length and things like that really hurt it for me. I don't know how I feel, but I definitely think it was interesting enough. And I wanted to make sure everyone sees it. And I really still think it was a really excellent witch movie. And I was really interested by the dynamics of it. But I just don't know how I feel as a horror film. It works for me. And nothing to do with the original Suspiria, just on its own merits. But there are some sequences in there that I will always remember. Remember that, you know, some of the dance sequences that mix with the deaths and some really interesting stuff. So it's really in that spot because it deserves to be in the 10, but I don't know if what its real position is.
And for that exact reason, it was in my top 10 until today.
Interesting, yeah.
Today's, because I don't know how I feel about it yet.
Yeah, no, and I have a couple around that spot, that littler movies that I probably even like more, but that one, I know there's something there. I haven't worked that movie completely out yet.
Yeah.
But that's my number 10.
My number 10 is something that Rob G is going to be kind of surprised about, I'm sure.
Uh-oh.
It is Terrifier.
What?
Yeah. I mean, again, we're talking about fan. Hey,
yeah,
man.
Fan films.
Listen,
okay.
I mean, it's a film that I kind of frowned upon when I first saw the trailer.
Would you say you poo-pooed?
I was going to avoid poo-poo.
Poo-poo Terrifier? I just want that on the box.
But this is something that Rob G's company put out, and I got the Blu-ray, made sure the family was gone for the night, and put it on. And it was one of those films that, again, if I was 14 years old watching a horror film that I had never heard about, or maybe we read about in Fangoria magazine, I would have been very surprised by and probably enjoyed quite a bit.
So you're going to let your 14-year-old watch it?
Absolutely not. No, it's just not her bag either. So listen, here's the thing about Terrifier. I like its purity. I think that what Damien, who's the writer and director, did very, very well is did a just pure slasher movie. Mm-hmm. It has a few surprises around every corner. I think the guy who plays the clown, who's the guy that plays the clown, do you remember?
Howard Thornton.
Yeah, David Howard David Thornton. I think he did a really terrific job of giving us a very memorable killer, which is all in kind of a very mime-like performance. And, you know, it's a little over the top in terms of the grotesqueries that are on display, but it elicited a feeling in me, which was, holy crap, I'm really grossed out. I mean, like, I've seen everything, but I'm really disgusted by this. And then in the next, like, 10 minutes, it would surprise me with a character turn that I was like, oh, shit, okay, you took me off guard with that. Great. So, you know, I think it, you know, went on a little too long, but in terms of delivering a pure, grimy, gritty, gnarly little down and dirty slasher movie, I thought they did a fine job with it. And something that I'll revisit like down the road, you know, when I'm all by myself. But in terms of something that stuck with me, and in terms of something that I do talk about when people are like, movies don't feel dangerous, movies don't feel, and, you know, like, this movie kind of felt a little dangerous. It was fun. I liked that they kind of just went full tilt with the madness in it. So kudos to them.
Oh. And it's on Netflix now if you want to watch it.
And that's right. I was doing some Christmas shopping for my mom on Etsy.
You bought her a Terrifier shirt?
No, the Terrifier socks came up. Someone is making Terrifier socks.
You know, everyone's making money on
I'm sorry, Rob, it's time for a cease
and
desist.
Not me, though.
So, yeah, Terrifier socks. So my 10 is also going to get some flack from people listening at home, I'm guessing. My 10 is The Predator.
So I miss The Predator in theaters, and it's on iTunes now, and I'm like, it says two available to rent December 18th. I'm like, God damn it. I don't want to spend $20. I almost did. I almost did last night.
Okay, so I put this on my list, and I will be the first to admit that the film has some problems. There's some editing issues, and there were definitely moments in the third act where I was like, I don't know how they got here. I don't know how that person did that. Like, there's some definite editing issues. I had such a good time with this movie. And seriously, I will say this is a personal choice because I could live in a world written by Shane Black. Like, I've told you guys forever that The Last Boy Scout is one of my favorite movies ever. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Like, if this man crafted my life, I would be like, I'm completely amused by everything going on right now. So it was just like the perfect kismet to have him doing a Predator movie for me. And it feels like Dream Team, one of my favorite all-time movies, where you've got a group of kind of
crazies.
Mentally, I was going to say mentally unstable, but just people with various mental disorders, I mean, in varying capacities, some of them very slight, some of them severe, who are given kind of a task, a much larger than life task. And in this case, it's fighting a fucking predator. And I know that people wanted kind of a traditional predator movie. And this is kind of, it's a comedy about a group of, you know, prisoners, many of whom have mental problems, who are forced to fight a predator and get organized like that. But this was such a fun movie for me. So I know it's got issues, but seriously,
I had a lot of fun with it too.
I had a blast.
I like the movie.
Yeah.
I too had a lot of fun watching this movie, despite its flaws. Hashtag Predator Dogs.
Yes, I liked the Predator Dogs. That was cute.
My spoiler for the day.
You motherfucker.
Predator Dogs.
Wow. I didn't know there was Predator Dogs.
That. It's not that.
Dicks.
It's a big predator twist, dogs. Ryan. Which is the movie.
It literally is the whole movie.
If anything, it'll sell some more units. It's fun. The characters, I think the second half is a much less interesting movie. That first half is like really, the setup of the characters is really cool.
It's so
like,
fun.
Like, I want to watch those guys in a movie. I'll watch them in another movie.
Without Predator.
If that same group of people went on to fight an alien, I would be there. If they went on to fight Cthulhu, I would be there.
Actually, you're right. That might have been a better Alien film if they'd had that cast going into space. Yeah,
because it's the same setup as the Alien movies, where it's an ensemble. Because the Predator movies, some of them went ensemble, but the majority of them followed the pattern of the first one, where the ensemble slowly gets picked off, and then it's Arnold.
Wait a second. Aren't there Predator Dogs and Predators?
Maybe.
I think there are Predator Dogs in that too.
Not a spoiler.
I've seen it. All right. So now 10 favorite things. My number 10.
Are we bouncing back and forth or are we doing?
We're going to go round 10, movie round 10.
I'm so confused, guys. Yes. I'm just going with it. Okay.
Favorite thing. Changing our direction and then.
This will make sense.
We're going clockwise right now. Are we going counterclockwise at some point?
Yeah. Top 10.
Order of ages.
Top 10 favorite things. It'll make sense as soon as I say it and why I was excited to do this assignment that Ryan kind of came up with. But one of my favorite things about 2018 is Netflix horror. And what I mean by that is a lot of these films would not have made it into my top 10, but I'm amazed that they were giving opportunities to Gareth Evans. Jeremy Solnier has a new movie. Just on the TV side, getting to see something like The Haunting of Hill House, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. It was just, you know, in some of the movies that we talked about last week, it's just Netflix in general, in terms of original content and in terms of horror original content, kind of killed it this year. And so that was one of my favorite things, was getting to see brand new content, horror content on Netflix. Oh, Cargo was another one earlier this year that was very close to my list as well. And that was a Netflix exclusive. So yeah, one of my 10 favorite things about 2018, Netflix horror.
That's the perfect timing because mine's very similar. My number 10, weirdly enough, it is foreign horror films. Which is a similar kind of thing because some of them are Netflix. I just wrote so many cool ones this year. A lot of imagination showing what the genre can do outside of the U.S. Satan's Slaves, Terrified, Good Man is Revenge, Loves, Tigers and Not Afraid, all new spins on war and tropes, things we've seen a million times. And yet here somebody puts this new spin, a new gender bend, whatever it is. Super cool. And I think it's a similar – and Netflix and companies like that are helping that because it means people can make this content and dump it in that country's Netflix, whichever that is, and hey, I'll take it. So foreign horror, a lot of them didn't necessarily make my list, but they were, you know, some of the more interesting films I saw this year.
Cool.
Foreign horror.
I'm going to go in no particular order, but mine is Maximum Overdrive on Blu-ray. I mean, it's super simple because I've been waiting for this year for a very long time and waiting for someone to really gussy it up, throw some special features on it.
Second time this episode you've said gussy it up.
I'm going to gussy this shit
up. And they included you on that release.
Well, the thing is, I'm not tooting horns here, but there's a pretty stellar commentary from myself and Jonah Ray on that.
Pretty cool.
But I'm very pleased. Maximum Overdrive looks great and the cover art's amazing. It's nice and glossy. Anyways, I'm very thankful and happy about that.
My number 10 things I'm thankful for that aren't films is Santa Clarita Diet. Which is very specific.
You're about to talk about where I live. I was like, Santa Clarita. I'm like,
no.
Yes, all right.
No, not the town. Santa Clarita Diet. That is definitely my kind of horror, where it's the horror stuff, but it's a comedy. It's a sitcom first, and then the horror kind of becomes infused in it. So the first season I was okay with. I was like, this is really good. I enjoyed every minute of it. The second season I fucking loved. Like, I don't know what happened between the first season and the second season, but the second season upped the ante so much.
Yeah.
I laughed. Out loud so many times watching the second season, to the point that, like, waking my children up laughing out loud. So
that's the theme.
She, yeah.
Theme of the night, you're right.
Marnie just comes out, Mommy, shut the fuck up.
Mommy, shut the fuck up. Blood vomit with eyeballs in it. Shut up, Mommy.
So, I got to go back to it. I watched the first two of the second season and was liking it, but then just kind of fell off TV.
Yeah,
for a
you
while.
Should, during the break, check it out, because season two was like a huge step forward. And, like, it's like they got in their groove. They got in their groove, and it was just
so
top
funny.
Notch from start to finish, and I laughed a lot too.
Yeah. So Santa Clarita Diet.
Number 9 movie, possibly controversial, I don't know, Halloween. And that was because this was, I saw it twice in theaters, and it both times were among my favorite theatrical experiences this year.
What were the two contexts of your viewings? I know one was
One was Beyond Fest, where I it did help tremendously with seeing the original movie right before it. So getting to see a double feature, because, you know, again, it's like you're going to walk into any movie, sequel, remake, whatever it is, with the, like, it's hard to contextualize and forget all the other things you grew up watching. And so getting to see the original movie and then immediately after seeing the new one helped tremendously. And so I enjoyed that first experience. And then the second time, a whole bunch of us went to see it opening night. And I just, you know, it's very rare we get to do it. We did it last year with It, where, you know, sometimes you need those audience movies. You need to get everybody together on a Friday night and remember why we love all this stuff. And so, yeah, I like the movie, not it. I don't love it. To the one person not looking at me right now. I have my...
Ryan's texting right now.
I say, why so low, brother? Why so low on the list?
He's texting David Gordon Green.
No, yeah, tell Gordon Green he made my number 9.
Tell Rob G he'll never work in this town again.
like any Halloween sequel, there's always... It's impossible to satisfy everyone. So, of course, there's a few things about it that I like less than others, but... I thought it was a solid sequel, and more importantly, I stand by my love of the third act. I thought, like, if you give me a great finale, I'm going to walk out of that theater just happy. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I did that twice this year.
How do you feel about the British podcasters? Because I felt you were outsourcing our jobs. Like, we could have had an American podcaster in that film.
Why were we
Why
not
British?
In that movie?
Why British?
You went British
because
podcasters?
Because they were originally documentarians, and I said, hey, what about podcasters?
I know a few should have been your next phrase.
I love that they had to be British documentarians.
Makes them sound smart, or not, like wizards.
Not that I need to defend it, but the British would be, I don't know, maybe Americans would be that way too. I was going to say the British are very, like, the way they act towards Jamie Lee, for example, is like they just go for the kill.
Yeah.
They're not trying to be subtle or whatever. They want what they want out of you. Yeah. So that's why I was like, oh, of course
they're
British.
Tabloidy. Yeah, that's interesting. Okay.
Anyways, your 9, Elric?
Let's see.
Elric has been hiding his 9, which is.
He's hiding his list.
Okay, this is another one that
mine.
This one can float up and down, and I know it's going to be higher than a couple others. It's the only film I've seen twice on the list. And that is Anna and the Apocalypse.
Oh.
This film could be as high as... It's going to sound weird. It's the kind of movie that could be as high as number 1 for me and as low as 9. And it's not really low being in the 9. It's such a fun and joyous thing. It's not my kind of horror because I tend to watch horror films for a particular feeling that I want of horror. But I love everything about it. Because I love Sing Street. I think Sing Street... So to me, this was Sing Street with zombies. I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
I've seen it twice now. And each time, I just think the songs are fun. I like the characters. I like the world. It feels like this is going to be a major... I feel like this movie will have the legs of a Shaun of the Dead. It doesn't mean it's quite at that level, but I think it will last forever. I think people will be enjoying it forever. Probably the only film on this list that will have that kind of rewatchability to it.
I think it's going to take a little while, but yes, I think people are going
to
discover
it's gonna
it.
It's going to take a while for people to get over the music.
Yeah.
It will.
But the music, I thought the songs are great, and I think it's really fun, but I won't overdo it now because I know it'll probably be higher than a couple others. And it was like at my 5 at one spot, and I was like, well, but let me move this around. Anyway, it's super cool.
All right.
All right. My number 9 is Paco Plaza's Veronica. Hit the U.S. this year.
Yeah, January or so on Netflix. Shockwaves approved.
Yes, Shockwaves approved. Tale of a teenage girl who plays with a Ouija board and bad stuff happens, yep, as it usually does. What I kind of dialed into was the era, which is the early 90s, set in Madrid. And what I liked about it is it's, you know, not only about this girl who's contending with supernatural forces, but she's also contending with the idea that she's growing up a lot faster than she needs to, because her mom is away quite a bit. You know, she's like, this is a girl who's got to take care of two children, as well as elements of possession and all this these otherworldly forces that are encroaching on her family. It's also got a terrific, terrific scene and performance by the lead actress, where she's just sitting at a table with, I believe it's like a spoon or something like that, and she's just having, it's a casual meal, and something terrible is happening, and it's just a great, great moment of tension that that just really stuck with me. Paco Plaza is obviously the guy, one of the co-creators of the Rec series. He co-wrote this one, and I think it's it's definitely cherry picking from a lot of supernatural thrillers that we've seen over the last decade, and it contends with a lot of the supernatural thrillers we're seeing today. But it's one that definitely stuck with me, and I thought it was done in a very mature way.
Nice. It was very mature.
It was very mature.
I liked it. It's a fun
that
movie.
That floated in my the 10-8 mark for a while. Yeah. And I ended up not picking it. But. Yeah. Again, but it falls in Netflix horror.
Yeah. I was going to say, what's interesting and kind of playing into the mature element, it's like you're actually seeing a progression in Paco's direction. You know, he grew as a filmmaker. He was co-directing the first two Rec movies. He took on Rec 3 by himself, and then he's just been growing as a filmmaker as he goes along. So.
Yeah. So my number 10 is one that my number 9 is one that I'm backing up, guys. It's another one that I struggled to call a horror film, and I did this with a lot of films. Like Thoroughbreds probably would have been on my list.
But I like Thoroughbreds.
I loved that movie, but I'm still kind of like, is it horror? I don't know. And I finally made the decision, and I called this one horror. And this is Lizzie. Anybody
about Lizzie Borden?
Oh,
Lizzie Borden film.
Right.
Craig McNeil's new film.
This
is the guy who did The Boy. Yeah. You know, I got a screening link for this back a while ago when I was flying back to the East Coast, when we were doing film screenings on the East Coast. And I watched it in an airport, and I stopped myself. And usually I'm like, I'll screen it on my iPad and I'll be fine. And this one, I got about 20 minutes in, and I stopped myself and was like, I actually want to watch, really pay attention to this. And so I ended up renting it off Amazon a couple of weeks ago. It's fucking awesome. It's Chloe Savini and Kristen Stewart, and I'll call it a theory of what could have happened with Lizzie Borden. It's by no means historical. There's nothing to really justify it, but it's Lizzie, and Kristen Stewart plays a maid, and it's kind of the story between the two of them, and then of course we all know what happens at the end. But it is really captivating and really beautiful. And I kept wondering why I hadn't heard about this. And then I saw Vanity Fair did a big article about it. And even when you look at Amazon right now, it's 5-star. It's got all the stars, and all the reviews are why is no one talking about this movie? It's fucking amazing. And so I'm going to say the same thing. Why is no one talking about this movie? It's fucking amazing. And it's probably the same reason that I did. When someone first said that they'd made a film about Lizzie Borden, I immediately pictured kind of a quick and dirty movie knockoff.
Yeah.
And this is not. This is a serious character study that goes batshit bonkers at the end.
Well, there was that Christina Ricci Lifetime thing, wasn't
Yes, there was. That was a couple years ago. And there's definitely been some B-grade Borden movies. So
that's cool. I like Craig McNeil. I want to see I got to see Lisa.
I like Craig McNeil. Kristen Stewart is I love her in everything. Maybe not Twilight, but everything else she's ever done. And so this was really nice. Lizzie. Cool.
All right, my number 9 favorite thing, and hear me out here, because this is stretching out of the horror genre. I really love DC's animated movies this year, and what I mean by that is I'm a big comic book fan, and in terms of their theatrical movies, they're not exactly satisfying me in the same way that Marvel is, but they've always done an excellent job with their animated films, specifically Batman tends to always be really cool. But they're taking a lot of weird chances now, and they're going into the Elseworlds worlds, which is basically different time periods, different timelines, different settings. Last year they did Justice League Dark, which was led by Constantine. This year there's an animated Constantine movie called City of Demons that just came out.
Whoa.
Love it. And it's Matt Ryan, who played him on the TV show, has reprised him in animated form, and he's now currently playing him on DC's Legends of Tomorrow. So, I mean, that's the thing. They're doing that. They did Batman Gotham by Gaslight, which is Mike Mignola, the guy who created Hellboy, had done a comic book series that put Bruce Wayne, Batman, in the era of Jack the Ripper.
That was an Elseworlds thing.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. so they made an animated movie of that with Jennifer Carpenter as Selina Kyle.
What?
So, I mean, they're doing some wild stuff. They just did the Death of Superman, which isn't really horror, but and Batman Ninja, which is incredible. But I love that they're starting to delve into those darker characters like Constantine and like the Jack the Ripper stuff, and I hope we get even crazier movies next year from them, because it's finally starting to work. Did you ever think you'd get an animated Constantine movie, let alone it's his second one now?
Is he allowed to smoke in it?
Yes.
Good.
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think that was kind of a big plot point that was left out of the TV show there.
Well, until halfway through when they realized they were probably going to cancel it, and he just did it anyway, which I thought was amazing. But yeah, he's on Legends of Tomorrow, which I haven't caught up on yet.
Check out Gotham by Gaslight, because I always liked that one. I picked that up at a Fangoria convention.
Oh, yeah?
And I read it on the train. So just a brief tangential thing that you guys might be horrified or amused by. So when my dad would take me into New York City for the Fangoria conventions, we'd take the metro from New Haven to New York. And I remember on the way back, we were all coming back from the Fango show. I was reading this comic book, Gotham by Gaslight, and this guy walks by me. And he's like, oh, I saw you at the convention. Did you have a good time? I was like, yeah. And he's like, what'd you get? And I was like, oh, I got this Leatherface thing, and I got this, and I got that. And he's like, great. Me and the kids are back there. If you want to come hang out, we were at the show too. And I was like, great. So I did get up, and I walked back there, and I was hanging out with this guy. And my dad was kind of eyeballing him the whole time. And the guy had a kind of a creepy vibe about him. And I was just like, okay, cool. His kids seemed nice enough, whatever. So I went back, sat down, and finished reading the comic book. 2 weeks later, he was arrested for being a pedophile.
Whoa.
He was a Boy Scout leader. He had gotten it was crazy. And I just remember my dad going, what the? And he's like, isn't that guy? And I was like,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyways, that's my creepy connection to Gotham by Gaslight. It's just, I have that weird memory.
Way to bring it down, Rob.
Yeah. We were into that until Rye's pedophile story.
He just turned his number 9 favorite thing into a pedophile story. Oh, so I don't know how that works, but I think he ruined it.
No, I didn't ruin it. Anyways.
All right, I'll bring it back up with this one, because this is going to be fun.
Oh, please.
Number 9 of my favorite things.
Yeah.
Is the pool scene in Strangers 2. Because Strangers 2 ain't making my list, but the pool scene's probably my favorite scene of the year.
I'll back you up on that.
I have shown that scene to so many people who, not even the movie, I'll just go, just watch this. And they just go, oh my God, that's so much fun. I love it. I love the use of music, the use of color. I don't want to spoil anything. Had it ended a little differently, I think it would be an even better scene. It ends in a bit of a cop-out, I think. But the structure of the scene, I just feel – I like a lot. Actually, there's quite a few scenes in that movie I actually really enjoy on a scene basis. I do love the truck, the Christine kind of references at the end. I like some of the fonts. I really don't like the character action and build up at the start. But man, I love the scene so much. It could have been even higher on my list. I could watch it right now and I'd feel good about life. So thank you for that, Johannes.
Which is rare from a Strangers
movie. You
did
good. Yeah, exactly. Strangers 2 pool scene.
Nice. My number 9 is the mobile apps.
Oh, yeah.
I got heavily addicted to the Friday the 13th
Dandy
puzzle game.
I
also got heavily addicted to the Goosebumps Horror Town game. Like, heavily addicted. I probably spent like $40. Sorry, Ciara. because when we were shooting, you know, when you come back from a night shoot, you're so revved up that when you roll into a hotel room at like 3 or 4 in the morning, the last thing you want to do is just like go right to sleep because you're still wired. So I would just build my little horror town and move people around and drop some coins in there to get special characters. It was incredibly addictive until there were certain achievements I couldn't unlock, and I was like, fuck you, Horror Town. And then I just wanted to light a match to the entire thing. But the Friday the 13th puzzle game is very much in the same vein as Slayaway Camp and is made by the same people, but it's basically Jason Voorhees, and you're kind of moving around a map trying to kill people, but you have to do it in a very strategic way. So anyways, those two games ate up a lot of my 2018.
A lot of fun.
Nice. My number nine favorite things is Ghoul, which is a Blumhouse Productions, right?
It's Blumhouse and Phantom.
Yeah.
It was a co-production in India.
Yeah. On Netflix, I guess I'd call it a mini-series because it was only six episodes. Uh-huh. I just love that one because I had no idea where it was going, but I was captivated the entire time. Yeah. It was international. I felt like I was seeing something that I was not accustomed to or aware of. It had a wonderful feel to it. So I really liked Ghoul. That was a good one.
All right.
Good job, Ryan.
Number eight movie for me is Ghost Stories. This was one that I initially caught at Chattanooga, I believe. And it's sort of an anthology, I guess, because there's an investigator that's trying to disprove three separate ghost stories. I just found it thoroughly entertaining, very scary, brilliantly executed. I had a big problem with the ending. That's the one thing that is preventing this from being higher on my list. But I still think the whole is better than the sum of its parts, and I can overlook an ending I wasn't satisfied with for the fact that the rest of the movie was so solid and scary and interesting and cool. Well, so we haven't had a good old-fashioned traditional ghost story in this vein in a while. And so, yeah, it's my number eight movie.
Well, I'll cut in here because my number eight movie is also Ghost Story. But I liked the ending. I thought it was fun. And I was reading stuff online where people were like, I won't. But everybody was like, well, now it means nothing. Now it's not a horror movie. Now it's a nothing.
The fun, I don't see it as fun at all. It's kind of a downer.
Definitely, it's a dark ending, but I still enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. But wow. Yeah, across the board, like the movie, I loved how it was, like the first segment was just terrifying as shit. And then the second segment, I thought was way more lighthearted. And then the third one was just, I'd never seen anything like it. It was just a trip. I liked the whole thing.
Yeah. My initial in the theater impulse was probably similar to yours, but having time away from it, I really love this one. It's a lot higher on my list. We'll get to it later. I think it's going to be like one of the little mini masterpieces of this year that will last because the stories individually are so good.
Yeah.
I think it'll be very interesting to watch it a second time, knowing what the ending is and how that might animate. I haven't watched it
yet. Yeah, I haven't seen it a second
and
time
And I
either.
Bet you it will probably help gestate a little bit. But anyway, either way, I'm a big fan of this one. I'll talk a little bit more about it later, but I really like this one. And I think it's been really lost here in America. It obviously was a huge hit in England, and it seemed like people really took to it. Here, it seems like it just kind of came out and went, and which is kind of cool because it means there'll be plenty of time for people to discover it.
Yeah.
I think it's really spooky.
All right. What's your eight, Alex?
Yeah, that's right. Number eight is one we watched a couple weeks ago, and I loved it. It's Terrified from Argentina. I really like that one. That of the smaller movies I saw that I knew nothing about, that's got some of my favorite little creepy, you know, moments in it. I think there's a lot that can be still improved on the story and the structure and things like that. But I'm never going to forget that little boy. I'm never going to forget some of those jolt scares. And it was fun. I love not knowing something about a movie that just comes out of nowhere and it's good. So that was Terrified. If you haven't seen that one, it's on Shudder.
Yeah, that's a little higher up on my list.
Okay.
My number eight is actually The Strangers Pray at Night.
Oh yeah.
I really like The Strangers. I think that they are one of those very, very iconic horror villains that are underutilized. I'm actually glad that someone, you know, dusted them off 10 years after the first film. I thought Johannes Roberts did a fantastic job in creating intensity. And you're right, the pool scene is really, really great. Yeah. I just, you know, I find myself just because I have it on my iPad, just like kind of watching it and just seeing the beauty
of
its color.
It would be a teachable sequence. It's like the way that you sound and the audio underwater, it's so smart.
Yeah, it's really well done. But just in terms of, you know, being a just a fun, pure stalk and kill film. I really rolled with it. I thought, Christina Hendricks is Christina Hendricks?
I
thought the cast was really good. And yeah, it just clicked with me. I mean, like, I thought the original Strangers was a kind of very somber, depressing slasher movie. Yeah. And what Johannes did was inject a lot of vitality and energy and fun into it, just kind of reinvigorating the potential of what the Strangers movies could be. And I'm very curious to see if they'll continue, you know, playing with it a little bit more.
I think what keeps it off my list is a final girl who I don't want to survive.
Yeah.
Like when I'm watching her
come
going,
on,
you
man.
Do
She's
not
just
deserve
a kid.
To live.
Jeez.
That was an issue I had.
If that car had run her over on fire, I would have been like, all right, I'm in.
Yeah, I couldn't just didn't, cheer for you know, her the entire
no, she was
time.
Terrible.
And it until did, it Marnie becomes a teenager.
Oh, no, no. She's good. I was horrible when I was a teenager, and I could just expect it. But yeah, still, but, it's I wanted somebody I could cheer for. Yeah.
All right.
So my number eight. I already went. That's why I got confused on the numbers.
So now we're at the eight favorite things. I got to say, The Return of Fangoria, and just in general, the horror magazine this year. It coming back, us doing the unveiling episode, which I thought was a lot of fun. I don't know. I mean, it's funny because there's something I credit Fangoria for this. There's something about going to a store, whether you're about to travel or you just have a weekend off, seeing something on the shelves. Like I think Ryan, you picked up like this, you know, 100 Years of Frankenstein magazine or whatever it was, the Parade, and then I went and bought it right away because I'm like, yeah, you know what, I want that on my coffee table to read over the week. So just in general, I it's so good to have Fangoria back as a magazine. I'm still reading it, like I'm savoring this, and taking advantage of it.
Yeah.
Before we know it, we'll have another issue. But that on top of a stack of other cool horror magazines, I mean, you know, Horror Hound has been doing a great job for years. Rue Morgue is still doing good stuff.
Famous Monsters has been going on for a little while now too, but they're doing that kind of supersized $24.99 edition. You can still find it on stands. But I was at the newsstand last week, and I forgot what was on the cover, maybe Godzilla or something like that. But I picked it up, and there was actually like a decent amount of articles in there that were like really interesting. And I was like, oh, the price tag $24.99. I was like, oh, I don't know about that.
It's tough.
But yeah, that's a good time for horror mags. The Fangoria's Return is my number two, and I'll dive in a little bit later on.
Okay.
That.
Yeah, it's on mine as well, but we'll get into it later. Number eight, Nicolas Cage in genre cinema.
Yeah.
What a year. And there's one I haven't seen. I've heard there's one other Cage film I haven't seen.
Up this
but I love Cage in obviously a film that will be on my list later, Mandy.
Uh-huh.
I love him in Mom and Dad, where he is unhinged. And you know who's...
Ryan's naked face.
John Waters is top 10 of the whole year Mom and Dad made. Like, and he's an art house guy. You should see his list. It's all art house. And then Mom and Dad, I'm like, fuck yeah, John Waters. You know what's up. I love Mom and Dad, and it really narrowly missed this list, actually. It's just a fun movie. And now he was announced yesterday or a couple days ago that he's going to be the lead in Richard Stanley's major Lovecraft adaptation.
Because
it's the same company who did Mandy, so it makes sense. But there's one other film that came out this year that I haven't been able to see yet. I think people are just starting to talk about it, that Cage is in, that looks genre-driven. I just love seeing, he's one of those actors I always love, but I especially love getting him in those aesthetics. And we'll talk a little bit more about Mandy soon, but God bless Nick Cage.
All right.
Nice.
We're talking about favorites?
Favorite things.
My number eight is the saxophone.
Saxophone.
Ready for this, guys?
Oh,
saxophone made a return in a big way in Nine Inch Nails, Ghost, The Midnight, and Gunship. All had albums that came out this year. All are excellent.
Wait, you're not referencing Devil's Honey?
No, I'm not.
That's what kicked off the research. Everyone's so in Devil's Honey.
And they were like, everybody.
Oh, it's like sexy and hot and grindable. Yeah. Let's put saxophones in everything.
I love it.
No, but it was just great to hear the sax come back in Gunship's new album. Tim Capello from The Lost Boys.
I was going to say, I can't hear a saxophone without picturing him.
Yeah. Dark All Day features Tim Capello, which is a pretty great music video too, because it's a, you know, like a kind of an anime inspired music video that's got Buffy, Blade, George Clooney's Gecko Brother, the Frog Brothers, and I think that covers it. And they're all being transported to a concert where Gunship is playing, but all of the attendees are vampires, and it's all about these famous vampire hunters going into a concert blowing. Yeah, it's really fucking cool though. And it ties into my, you know, this kind of love of the band Ghost. It was a great year for Ghost. Ghost,
you and I were at the same show, right? You went to the San Bernardino concert?
No, we were at the Forum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You were there?
Mm-hmm.
why doesn't Becca text me when she says, hey, are you good? I see your Instagram and you were at the ghost show. Let's meet up.
Because they're there with like a million other people.
Oh my God.
Come find me. You Anyways, only see me twice a week. We should connect here an hour out of the town and a million people.
But this band put a hell of an album called Prequel. Great, great fucking album. Great band. Great concert. Anyways, the saxophone is my favorite, my number eight favorite thing of 2018.
I've never heard the band Ghost.
Are you serious?
I've seen pictures of it because everyone I know who's into horror listens to them. I've never even heard what they sound like.
I got into them because somebody at some point said to me, if you actually had like a popular metal band that played a giallo style, it's Ghost. And they played me Square Hammer, which was my ringtone on my phone for years.
Nice.
And from then, that just kind of led me down the rabbit hole of everything.
That's really funny. I know what you listen to, and I know what Rob listens to. I have no idea what kind of music. Elric listens to.
Elric listens to it's like young
young MC or
Tone
Loc.
Actually, close though. It's probably my favorite artist. That's pretty close.
He's in his car listening to Funky Cole Medina.
Actually, yeah, I would love
really?
To that. But no, it's more like she was actually close. Spoken word. I'm a big Leonard Cohen fan. Big Tom Waits fan. Yo La Tengo. Velvet Underground. Punk. I like Sonic Youth a lot.
Yeah. Got it. Okay.
But I was never a metal guy. I've been very upfront with horror people about this. I was never like maybe when I was 13, I liked Metallica. That was it. I never went deeper with.
You like the folky guy? Are you like a Bob Dylan? Sort of, that stuff. That makes sense.
But I also like punk, like it's that soft punk, like like you know, Sonic Youth. And
thus concludes stuff. Getting to know your co-host.
Getting to know music.
Yeah. Becca, what's your number eight favorite?
My number eight was, and this would be this would be much higher on my list. I have a feeling, but I must confess, I have not finished it. But even having only watched a couple episodes. It made number eight, Haunting of Hill House. I am only on the third episode, I must confess, because I was shooting when it came on, and then I was like cramming to catch up on everything. Okay. So I just finished the third episode last night. It was like, okay, you know what? I've heard that the third episode is kind of the slowest and that it gets like way better and it kickstarts and really starts ramping up at this point. But even only having finished the third episode, it made number eight. Kick ass. And it definitely gave me, since we were talking about doorknobs last week, with the super high doorknobs and better watch out.
Somebody sent an explanation on
Ghost
Twitter. Did you
dingos.
See that?
No way, really?
Someone replied to the Shockwaves account with
like
an explanation about the knobs.
It was like a podcast that like he explains it in the first 30 minutes. But when I watch Hill House, it makes me feel like my house is very underdesigned and I really need to pay more attention to my doorknobs. So, but in general, it's just a fucking kick-ass show and I'm really having a good time with it.
Cool. And you'll continue to.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's a great show. Number seven for movies. We've already talked about it, Terrified. And this will be the first of probably several things that I discovered on Shudder. I think Shudder's kind of like kicking ass this year and really curating some really interesting cinema. I found, much like you said before, Elric, when you picked it, I found some of the scenes I can't stop thinking about. I think the opening scene is great.
Yeah.
The stuff with the kid is incredible. I wish... the thing that is preventing this from being higher is I wish there was just one element that brought it all together. I wish there was something in the ending that just was like, this is how it all connects, because otherwise it just feels like a bunch of set pieces.
Or it
almost it's got an anthology feel to it where it's almost like, oh, we're following different people on the street. And there's some connection, but nothing really substantial.
Yeah,
so,
you need an emotional through line. A
I need an emotional through line, but the scenes themselves are so good and scary that I'm like, oh, but this is still a great movie. So, my number seven is Terrified.
I'm with you. My number seven, we just talked about it a minute ago, is The Clove Hitch Killer. Definitely wouldn't have thought this one would be anywhere near my 10 when I heard about it. And I really think it's a smart movie. It's subtle. The performances are great. And it's fun to watch. It's not my type of movie either, which is nice, like, because it's not really that stylish a film. It's subtle, and it really won me over. And that's a real testament to its writing and performance. So I think it's a really great film and hope more people discover it. Because it's, you know, actually a creepy character and a really also quite funny in a way. And another one that I recommend, like based on that vein, is I Am Not a Serial Killer. That's another one I liked a lot. But that one takes an actual supernatural twist, whereas this one stays within reality.
Yeah.
Have you
yeah.
seen this one yet, Rob?
No, I haven't.
Because I keep thinking that you will like
you'll
it.
You'll like it.
It probably would be. It probably, but I haven't had a chance
to see
it.
It's okay. I think you actually dig it.
Yeah, it's really funny because I saw the trailer and I thought it was a period piece based on Dylan McDermott's glasses.
It kind of does.
Like,
feel like
he looks like an
80s
dad. Yeah, yeah.
To be honest, I think I watched it thinking it was Beard, to be honest. I can't remember.
Yeah. My number seven is Adam McDonald's Pie Wacket. It came out earlier this year. And it's just one of those little discoveries where I knew nothing about it. I read nothing about it. I didn't even see a trailer. I was just up late one night and hit rent, and I was completely captivated by the tone. Really taken in by Nicole Munoz's performance. Basically, it's just kind of one of those teen angst stories about a girl that's just constantly fighting with her mom, and they have good reason to, and it's because there's no patriarch, there's no father figure in their life, in their lives, and she's constantly at battle with her mother, and she does what teenage girls do, where she acts out, and she does so in a very kind of weird way, which is she performs a spell and tries to conjure up something to kill her mom, which is a very extreme way of lashing out. But, again, she doesn't think anything of it. She doesn't think anything is going to come of it. And something does. And, I think McDonald, who did a great film called Backcountry, which is the Bear movie.
The Bear movie. I didn't realize
that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That's the craziest sequence.
Yeah, that's a crazy, crazy sequence. Really good sequence. You know, there's some really good stuff in Pie Wacket that's there for discovery. So definitely check it out.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. Yeah. It didn't quite make my list. I think there's just a couple tonal things with the family. But all the horror stuff was really good.
Really good, yeah.
And that's the actress from Walking Dead, too, as the mom.
Laurie Holden.
Used to come to Jump Cut all the time, remember?
That's right.
Yeah.
Becca?
Yeah. So my next one is Annihilation.
Nice.
Yeah. Which, and I have to say, I put this one on my list because if there is one film that I have thought more about this year than any other, is Annihilation. Mm. Because I still don't exactly know what happened at the ending. I still don't know exactly what was going on for the bulk of the film, but I have gone through all different theories and have different concepts of what I think it was. And I have spent literally months, because this was like at the beginning of last year, thinking about it. And so I have to say, it was captivating watch for me. I was 100% in the entire time going, I don't care, I even care what they find there without blowing the ending. I don't even care what they find there. This whole ride has been amazing. And then having it be something that I'm still kind of replaying in my brain to try to figure out what it was made me love it even more.
Let me tell you what I did to have to decide whether to put this on my list. So we're Upgrade. I said to myself, with Upgrade, would RoboCop be on? And the answer was no. Then with Annihilation, it was off this morning because I was like, no, it's definitely has a horror scene, really one of the best horror scenes of the year, but it's a sci-fi. And then I realized, wait a minute, is Event Horizon on our lists? Oh, yes, it would be, and this is exactly the same as Event Horizon because it's really even structured a lot like Event Horizon and has certain scenes that are exactly like Event Horizon. Mm-hmm. Like, fuck yeah, it's a horror movie. It's going on my list. So it's up pretty high on my list, too. And I'm like you. I haven't stopped thinking. I more than any movie, I'm looking forward to seeing that one again because there's certain clues in it that will only resonate second time. Mm-hmm. But I'm so glad I saw – of all the movies I saw this year on the big screen, that's the one I'm most glad I caught that way because it really is beautiful in that. And Alex Garland's a really interesting filmmaker. I mean, writer turned filmmaker. Definitely a sci-fi guy. So he's a sci-fi guy. But that scene with the bear voice, that's all people need to know, is one of the scariest things of the year, hands down.
Even just the amount of detail that went into it, how every single element of that film had been tweaked slightly just enough to make it look off from what we would naturally see. The amount of production design that went in, it was just so spellbinding to watch.
I got to give it another chance because I do regret not seeing it on the big screen, but seeing it home. And really, for me, I liked it, but I was really taken out of the movie by the CG stuff. So the scene that you're referencing that you think is scary, the second it started, I was like, oh.
That's interesting.
I've not gotten over the uncanny valley of CG.
Oh, yeah.
The second I see it, I am out. And I'm like, no.
See, I think for
as opposed to if there was a physical thing in the room, I would have been like,
I think in this one, I think it worked for the reason she was saying, where everything's meant to be a little off.
Yeah.
But I think the difference being maybe the soundscape in a theater really captures you. So you just believe it. Like, I believed that part. But at home, also, I think the pacing at home would be a little tougher because I think it's paced in a way that to slowly pull you in, like Stalker.
Yeah.
It has those Stalker comparisons.
Yeah, it does. But I get the CG thing because that's what kept the terror off my list. Like, I the AMC show about the boats trapped in the ice.
See, I dug that.
I loved it until the big CG thing showed up, and then I was like, oh, God, you just
killed
it for me.
And yet there was somewhere it didn't feel CG, and then somewhere it felt really CG. Like some of the early ones where you didn't
see
it very much.
Where you just saw a glimpse. I was like, I don't even fucking know what that is, but I'm so
I had forgotten about Terra. Terra probably would have made my 10 things.
It's on my runner-ups because I loved that show for like the first 5 episodes, and then by the time it got to the end and it got really CG'd, I was just like, oh, that just killed it for me.
No, I mean, I'm with you guys. I can't stand it at all, but for Annihilation, I didn't even, it didn't cross my mind.
Didn't think about
it,
yeah.
For whatever reason, so.
All right, so number 7, favorite thing. We were very, very lucky in home video in terms of like all these horror labels that we love putting out great stuff. Mm. But just in the nick of time, right at the end of the year, one of my favorite things is Blue Underground. They were pretty dormant and silent all year, and then out of nowhere, they dropped both Zombie and Maniac. And I think they're both like essential and two of the best releases we got this year of classic films. So love and respect Blue Underground.
Yeah, I totally agree. They would be high on my list too. My number 7 is Tennessee Horror Film Festival.
You've been a two this year.
It's been a hell of a year for me. Wow. Chattanooga, where I almost died and you guys saved my life.
And then
Knoxville, where I ditched you guys who were making me drink. So I got rid of you guys and had a much cleaner time.
Really? We did that.
It was mostly Rob. And the stewardess. Remember that stewardess? She kept giving us free drinks.
That is true. We drank the entire way to Chattanooga, and at one point it became free.
But Knoxville, so Chattanooga was great. It was it wasn't just a horror film festival. The Chattanooga one is a mix of genres, and your film played. Knoxville was a pure horror film festival, and I got to do a show there. And I loved both these trips. I loved the people I met. A lot of Shockwaves listeners, like a lot of them. I was really surprised, and just had a great time. And what it tells you, if I've been to Tennessee, this one state twice for two great fests, it tells you how alive the genre is in every state. I can only imagine each state probably has something akin to this, and that's a great sign. So. Yeah. I'd love to see more of these places doing this kind of stuff because, I don't know. I really had a good time. And thanks to both those guys for putting on such cool shows.
My number 7 is also a film festival, the Salem Horror Fest, which takes place in Salem, Massachusetts.
You didn't take us with you on that one.
No.
Next year.
No, they want us all there for year. But it was a eye-opening experience just because, one, it was their second year, but I just love to see how film festivals work with the community. And Salem is an incredibly beautiful and magical place that I had never visited despite growing up on the East Coast. And I could have lived there. I could have stayed longer. I would have loved to have just kind of hung out and seen. We had Halloween there, and I would have just loved to have seen some of the films that they had with the audience. But just like everybody there was a horror fan. Everybody there was just a beautiful communal vibe to it that I really liked. And it wasn't just about what's the hot new thing that we really need to, pull from the festival circuit to introduce to an audience over here. It was retrospective. It was thematic. It was about eco-horrors. It was about witches. It was about all of these things. They went week by week. There was like powerful women in horror. There was all this great stuff.
Now, how long was it?
It was a couple weekends, but we were out there for the opening weekend, which was like about 4 days, and then they would just like kind of go weekend to weekend. But really, really cool fest, so definitely recommend it.
Nice. Mine is holy fucking shit, Deep Rising got an amazing Blu-ray release.
Yeah. Had to be on there.
Of course it did. No, that just made my year. Like, even now that I am not a huge physical media collector anymore, I've purged down my collection to the ones that I'm like, I will watch this over and over. And Deep Rising's definitely up there.
Essential
so
for you.
I
essential.
Pre-ordered that one, and I never fucking do that.
I almost put your lecture on aquatic horror on my favorite things, mixed with your costume for trivia, which was Deep Rising.
I dressed as Deep Rising for trivia.
So there's a 3 Deep Rising. I think you've definitely done your Deep Rising for the year.
Thank you. Yeah, at trivia, and I couldn't wear it for very long because, man, that octopus costume was very hot. but I had an octopus costume, and I got a Barbie jet ski and 2 of Marnie's Barbies.
That's pretty good.
And I was an octopus holding.
Well done.
A jet ski.
On brand. I like it.
But Deep Rising Blu-ray.
All right, number 6 movie of the year for me. It was actually much higher, and I kept moving it around, but it's Hereditary. I assume it won't be the last time I hear about it today, but in terms of a directorial debut, In terms of some of the most shocking moments I saw this year on the big screen, also in terms of audience reaction, I saw it in a theater, and those shocking moments, you could hear a pin drop in our audience during that film. And I think Toni Collette, best performance of the year is her in this film.
It's got to be top five like horror performances. Mm-hmm. Of all time.
Yeah, yeah. It's like so that good. Unlike anything I've ever seen before, really stuck with me. I've only seen it that one time and it had an incredible impact. I just picked up the Blu-ray, so I'm looking forward to revisiting it before the end of the year. But in terms of a debut performance, actual moments that really did shake me and that I can't stop thinking about, Hereditary is high on the list, and it's my number six.
I'm still glad I didn't see that trailer.
Yeah, you
I only listened
to
it many times, but yeah, it'll be on the list. My next one is a movie that could also be as high as three, but it's number six. One of my favorite debuts of the year. I think the energy and the direction of this film is like probably one of my favorite directed films of the year, and that is but Revenge. I love the way Revenge is put together. Seeing it, I saw it at Chattanooga, and it just felt electric. It came on pretty late at night. It felt like the perfect way to see that movie. It was like it wasn't quite midnight, but it was like 11:30. It was just pulsating, and I was just like, holy shit, all these tropes I've seen a million times and can't stand in terms of rape revenge ideas, and then she just flips certain things, and it becomes almost absurdist, especially her ability to survive. But once you go with that, it also is just great drama. It's really exciting. It has a couple things that just still make me laugh. A certain thing that gets branded on the characters that I just think is hilarious. And then the last 20 minutes is like a weird fusion of American Psycho, but done to 100.
Yeah.
And it creates a rhythm and it's just so balls to the wall.
Well, I can't remember if it was you or just somebody that was talking about the movie who, regarding basically the second half, somebody's like, I didn't know there was that much blood in the human body.
Yeah. And it's so slippery. And I just love this vision. I really think this is such a cool film. It makes me excited to see what she would do next, just with that approach. Again, another case of a foreign film that puts a new spin on a trope, you know? But I love Revenge on Shudder.
My number six is Brett Simmons' You Might Be the Killer. In terms of a film that completely plays to my taste, mm-hmm. which is a little bit more horror comedy. This one's got Allison Hannigan and Fran Kranz, and the best way I could describe it is Friday the 13th meets The Mask.
Yep.
But it is
Jim Carrey
film.
The Mask.
Yeah,
that's actually great.
Yeah, and it's basically it basically just pulls you right in right from minute one and maintains a level of momentum as you're trying to figure out what's going on, and the body count is escalating. But Brett, who did a Scarecrow movie many, many years ago called Husk. It was an After Dark original. You know, he just brings a level. You know, it's just he's very good at horror comedies. He's just very clever. And I just, you know, Fran Kranz really brings a lot to it. I think if Fran was not in this film and it was just some random dude, I don't know if this would have worked as well. I think Allison Hannigan is a terrific, you know, co-star to this, because mostly she's just on the phone at a comic book store, you know, talking to Fran, walking through the rules of slasher movies. But it's a lot of fun. It's on Shudder now.
Oh, cool.
You could find it across other platforms as well. But
that's the real purpose of this show, is like I didn't even know that film exists.
Now
I'm going to watch that. That's
something I discovered.
There was a post on it that was real polarizing, like people arguing about it on the Shockwaves fan site a couple of days ago, and that prompted me to watch it. And I definitely have to say it's like one of my like super close runner-ups to making 10. Yeah. It's just fun.
It's just super
fun. I want to watch it again.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So You Might Be the Killer.
I won't like it because it's fun. Nah. Thanks.
Nah. Well, I was going to say, at the very end, there's also a You Might Be the Killer song.
Yes.
So it's got its own title.
I love
song.
That. Yeah.
It knows what it's doing. Yeah, it was fun. My number six is The Ritual.
David Bruckner's movie.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. Yeah. That one kind of snuck up on me, where one day I was just on Twitter and somebody was like, hey, The Ritual streeted today. It's amazing. Go watch it. And I did, like within an hour. Had no idea what I was going into. By far my favorite monster of the year. It was,
you know what's funny?
A fun one.
What I'm hearing through our discussions on this is, this year was a year of scenes, really great, memorable scenes. I wanted to see a supercut of some of the best, scariest scenes, because the reveal of the monster in A Ritual
so fucking good
is incredibly eerie. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, when they show, because it's backlit by a fire, if I recall.
Yep, and it's just the monster kind of unfolds.
It unfolds,
and it's just really well done.
I had to get closer to the TV just to try to make out the details.
I backed it up 3 times and then hit pause because I wanted to see more of it because I was like, it's very, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, but between that and then the little boy at the table and Terrified and the girl at the table in Veronica and Hereditary and all these, there's a lot of just
Satan Slaves had a couple
of great
scenes.
There's
just some really cool, production value in some of these moments. And imagination, there's still weird, scary things to show people that you haven't seen yet.
Cool. All right, so we got favorite things.
Six, this is where we're going to wrap up with number 6 on our favorite things this year. For me, honestly, horror apparel. And what I mean by that,
Rob's quite the fashionista.
I'm not. I'm a black t-shirt clad kind of guy since the convention days. This is the year that I went full-fledged. I mean, last year, Ryan, or maybe it was 2 years ago, Ryan, you got really into pins.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is I love that companies like Fright Rags, Cavity Colors, Creepy Company are upping their game. Yeah. And this is the year I became obsessed with horror socks, which they are all now doing. It's a little cute thing that me and my girlfriend have where we keep buying horror socks.
You're going to get the Terrifier socks, right?
I'm not getting the Terrifier socks. No. Uh-huh. But I did just order a whole bunch from Fright Rags Black Friday sale.
Yeah.
So I have Chucky socks. I have Necronomicon socks. I have quite a lot coming. But again, it's just all these here's the thing. There's a much like with the Blu-ray labels and all this other stuff, there's a lot of competition out there. And what's interesting about the t-shirt world is they're all pretty friendly and they're all doing cool new stuff, whether it's socks or pins or, like vinyl slip mats or whatever the case is. I love that. I mean, when we were kids, if we ever got like an Evil Dead socks, I just bought from Creepy Company a freaking Necronomicon pillow.
Yeah. Oh, they were going to say because the Creepy Company is keeping me well stocked because my new thing is the button ups.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've got a Leatherface button up from Middle Beyond. I've got two. I've got a Halloween and Leatherface Middle of the Beyond T button up. And then what else do I have? I've got a bunch from Creepy Company, They're like, I call them my Sunday wear when we're going to go out and kind of hang out.
I bought Shining bra and underwear this year. We live in a beautiful
Becca. Guys.
No, that's not like, they're not saucy looking. It's very like basic bra and underwear, but it's the fucking Shining carpet and that's amazing. And it's a beautiful time we live in.
It is. It's a beautiful time and I'm thankful for that.
Yes.
So, there you go. Elric, you're 6. I don't
know. Okay, my number 6 from the director of the first half of Knock Knock, Eli Ross, History of Horror. Absolutely thought I wasn't going to like it. First episode I didn't love. By the end of the series, I loved it. Want more of it. Wanted it to go for 2 hours. I loved mostly because it is a lighter dive for some of us, obviously, in terms of the movies they touch on. But it's a recontextualization of that through some really interesting people, and a lot of which I don't get to hear talk about horror and the type of guests maybe slightly out of our range to get the Tarantinos, Jordan Peele, a lot of people. But I really enjoyed it. I thought every episode was really exciting. It was one of my favorite things of the year, actually. So well done, Eli. Love that Knock Knock.
Yeah.
First half.
My number 6 is The Outer Limits Season 1 on Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. Outer Limits Season 2 is either, I think it's out now.
Out.
It just hit. Mm-hmm. It's on my Christmas list. But this was a show that next to The Twilight Zone, I appreciated and loved The Twilight Zone. But thanks to my father's education of The Outer Limits, he showed me, I remember it was on Laserdisc, he showed me the whole Season 1. And he was, he took me through. He's like, listen, this was an inspiration for this. And I'm going to show you this episode. It may remind you of The Predator. And I'd be like, oh, okay. And I sat down. I was like, oh, you're absolutely right. The Predator ripped off this fucking movie or this episode. But The Outer Limits, they look absolutely stellar. Some of them, there's one in episode 2. I forgot the name of it. It drags so much. But when it works, it really works well. And it's just a great sliver of genre history that you cannot ignore because it had such an impact on sci-fi and horror storytelling from there on out.
Excellent. And mine is the book Fantasticland, which technically came out in 2017, but it did its paperback release in October of this year, and that's where I discovered it. And even just having talked about it, I talked about it on the show 4 episodes ago, the amount of people have tweeted at me and said, holy shit, I read that book. It's like the best thing I've read in years.
My dad is reading it now.
It's so fucking good.
He did. He goes, so hey, what's it? Good. He goes, I listened to Becca's review of this book. I bought it.
Ask him. It is so fucking good. So Fantasticland by Mike Bockhoven, I think is how you say his name. It's just like one of these from a smaller press that just kind of crept up on me. Kyle Clark from The Nerdist told me I should read it and gave me his copy. And I read it in a weekend, like literally did not leave my couch for days, like telling everybody to piss off because I was reading it. And it was wonderful. And I want to read it again. And I want Ryan to read it.
I'm not going to be able to read it. I'm going to audible it. Okay. But I'm getting through The Chalk Man right now, and I think I'm in the last 30 minutes, so I'm very much looking forward to it. By the next episode in 2019, then we'll be able to talk some more
about it. And for everyone else out there who is capable of reading, check out Fantasticland. It is. Wow. No, I didn't
wow,
mean it.
Like, wow,
no, no,
Ryan,
that is not what
Ryan
I meant.
You know how many books and scripts I'm going to read on a regular basis, Becca? Forgive me if I have to audible something.
To our illiterate listeners. All you can do is listen to our show. You can't read our show.
I was insulting Ryan, not the listeners.
I think it goes both ways. I think you're insulting everyone. That's pretty good.
No, I was poking Rye, not the listeners.
You know what
by
my favorite, my non-favorite thing in 2018? Getting a new prescription glasses because I'm reading so much.
See, I had to get new because I'm just old. So there you go. But if you can read the book, as opposed to Audible's great. I applaud Audible. Uh-huh. But if you can sit down and read it, it is a quick read and you will burn through it because it is so tense and fantastic.
I'm going to wait for Ryan to read it.
Fantastic.
I'm waiting for Ryan to make a movie out of that.
If he's capable.
Well, we'll go see that movie.
Yeah, I'll see that with you.
Too big.
That's our Christmas present to them, is us seeing the movie.
Yeah, we're going
to
go see that movie
in a couple years.
So that's a wrap on episode 126.
Yes.
You've gotten through the first half of our year-end breakdown. Stay tuned next week as we get through the rest of our list.
All right, top 5. See you then.